Oy. This is Sid and Friends in the Morning.
Friends, how many of us have them? Friends.
77 WABC.
A federal judge in Florida tossed out the classified documents case against Donald Trump, agreeing with his lawyers that the appointment of the special counsel was unconstitutional. Special counsel Jack Smith's office said he will appeal. CBS's chief legal correspondent Jan Crawford explains.
In her 93-page decision, Judge Eileen Cannon said the special counsel was not properly appointed under federal law, ending, for now, Jack Smith's prosecution of the former president for his handling of classified documents.
I had every right to have these documents, personal belongings, and boxes.
On Truth Social, Trump hailed the dismissal of what he called a lawless indictment. The decision largely tracks an opinion by Justice Clarence Thomas in this month's Supreme Court presidential immunity case when he suggested Smith's appointment was unconstitutional. Cannon agreed because, among other reasons, she said Smith was an inferior officer prosecuting Trump, not a U.S. attorney or an official confirmed by the Senate. If the political branches wish to grant the Attorney General power to appoint Special Counsel Smith to investigate and prosecute this action with the full powers of a United States attorney, there is a valid means by which to do so.
She's not saying that it's impossible to have a special counsel appointed. She's saying if you are going to do it, there are specific pathways that are permissible under the Constitution to do it. And the Justice Department just didn't take one of those pathways here.
Now, this was widely seen as the strongest of the cases against Trump, though it was highly unlikely it was going to go to trial before the election in November. Now, those odds are about zero.
But what Judge Cannon is saying here is essentially, look, there's this weird anomaly in the Constitution. We have a process of which U.S. attorneys are nominated and they are then confirmed by the Senate. And yet the attorney general can just go onto any street in D.C. and pick any person and make them a special counsel with greater authority than the U.S. attorney. And that's what she's trying to get at here, saying, where is the footprint for this in the Constitution? Where is the authority to create Jack Smith within the first three articles of the Constitution? So it's a huge win for Trump.
Former President Donald Trump has selected Ohio Senator J.D. Vance as his running mate for the 2024 presidential contest.
We're getting new details into the decision-making behind choosing J.D. Vance. CBS News has learned the senator from Ohio made a secret trip to Mar-a-Lago Saturday morning to meet with Donald Trump. CBS's Ed O'Keefe reports on how this once Trump critic beat out the other contenders.
J.D. Vance has spent the last several months as a top attack dog for Donald Trump, over the weekend suggesting recent rhetoric of President Biden and Democrats may have led directly to the assassination attempt on Trump. But he hasn't always been a staunch supporter. In 2016, he suggested Trump might be America's Hitler, called him cultural heroin, and referred to him as noxious.
I'm a never Trump guy. I never liked him.
He also said he believed women who'd accused Trump of sexual assault.
And at the end of the day, do you believe Donald Trump, who always tells the truth? Just kidding. Or do you believe that woman on that tape?
Now, he says Trump's presidency changed his mind.
I was wrong about him.
The 39-year-old first rose to national prominence with the publication of his best-selling memoir, Hillbilly Elegy, later adapted to the big screen.
You got to decide you want to be somebody or not.
By the time he ran for the U.S. Senate starting in 2021, he'd reconciled with Trump, boosting his chances in a crowded GOP primary and helping him win. Vance is married with three children and becomes the first millennial on a major party presidential ticket, something the former president's oldest son, Donald Jr., considers a big plus.
I love that J.D. is young. You know, my father built Trump Tower at 37. You can be young and accomplished.
Born to a family with Appalachian roots, his parents divorced at a young age. He was raised mostly by his grandmother, whom he called Mama, as his mother struggled with addiction to opioids. After high school, he joined the Marines, served in the Iraq War, and later attended Ohio State University and Yale Law School. Vance spent the last 2 days mostly at his home waiting for a decision. He left for Milwaukee as the Buckeye State's junior senator. With only 20 minutes notice, Trump named him his new partner. Down here on the convention floor, delegates already making adjustments, signaling they support the decision. Now, on the issues, as a Senator Vance is more conservative than Trump on abortion rights, believing there should only be exceptions if the life of the mother is at risk. And he signaled earlier this year he would do something that Mike Pence wouldn't back on January 6, 2021, allow challenges to the election results from 2020 in several states. Both of those issues sure to be seized on by the Biden campaign and Democrats in the coming days.
President Biden is already weighing in on Trump's vice presidential pick.
He's a clone of Trump on the issues. So I don't see any difference.
The Secretary of Homeland Security said that someone outside government will soon be appointed to lead an independent review of the security failures at the Trump rally. He also announced that Robert F. Kennedy Jr., the independent party candidate, will get Secret Service protection. More now from CBS's Nancy Cordes at the White House.
Adjustments have been made to the former president's detail, to the current president's detail.
Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas called Saturday's shooting a security failure, though he insisted he still has confidence in Secret Service Director Kimberly Cheadle.
Is the Secret Service stretched too thin?
We draw upon resources not only across the federal government, but with state and local law enforcement. And I do intend to speak with members of the Hill with respect to the resources that we need.
As the Republican convention gets underway, the Biden team is moving cautiously to restart its own campaign advertising after pulling all ads this weekend as a sign of respect. They say the president's goal after the assassination attempt is this.
We need to lower the temperature.
Lower the temperature, bring the temperature down.
It comes after a few Republican lawmakers have baselessly suggested that Trump's shooting was an inside job directed by Democrats.
How do you feel? How does the rank and file feel when they hear that?
First of all, that is preposterous, and it is also dangerous to propagate rumors that are so unequivocally false.
In an interview with NBC, Biden was asked about some of his own rhetoric, including his frequent claim that Trump is a threat to democracy.
How do you talk about the threat to democracy, which is real, when a president says things like he says? Do you just not say anything because it may incite somebody?
You called your opponent an existential threat on a call a week ago. You said it's time to put Trump in the bullseye. There's some dispute about the context, but I think you appreciate that word.
I didn't see crosshairs. I was talking about focus on. Look, the truth of the matter was, what I guess I was talking about at the time was, there's very little focus on Trump's agenda.
Yeah, the term is bullseye.
It was a mistake to use the word. I didn't say crosshairs. I meant bullseye. I meant focus on him. Focus on what he's doing.
The Republican National Convention here in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, right now. That's right. You see the former president, Donald Trump, in his first public appearance. You can see the bandage on his ear. Let's listen in. You will hear this crowd go electric. Please welcome the next president of the United States, Donald J. Trump.
If tomorrow all the things were gone, I'd work for all my life. And I had to start again with just my children and my wife. I thank my lucky stars to be living here today, 'cause the flag still stands for freedom and they can't take that away. And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who died, who gave that right to me. And I gladly stand up next to you and defend her still today. 'Cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA. From the lakes of Minnesota to the hills of Tennessee, across the plains of Texas, from sea to shining sea, from Detroit down to Houston and New York to L.A., well, it's pride in every American heart, and it's time we stand and say that I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who died, who gave that right to me. And I gladly stand up next to you and defend her still today. 'Cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA. There ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA.
Woo! Now that's how you start a Tuesday morning, live right here once again, day two. 5 days, Radio Row, I should say, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. We are once again in the Panther Center, which, just to remind you folks, is about two blocks away from the Fiserv Arena, where the Milwaukee Bucks play their home games. And that was the scene last night. That's Pacific Arena, where once again Donald Trump walked out to that crowd, that Lee Greenwood song playing in the background. It was unbelievable. Just an unbelievable, surreal, spectacular evening in Milwaukee when you consider that about 48 hours before Trump walked out to that raucous crowd last night, he was millimeters away from dying, literally dying. And you saw the big white patch, the gauze, all that on his ear as he made his way out there. But it was a wonderful moment. Now, Donald Trump did not speak last night. He did not speak. He did come out, wave to the crowd, I should say, took a seat next to J.D. Vance, who, as you heard in the open put together by Justin Ellick, was announced earlier in the day as his VP partner, sat next to J.D. Vance, Mike Johnson, who I saw here yesterday, my friend, the Speaker of the House, and his family, of course, right behind him as well. But if you love Donald Trump, and most of you do, most of you listening to WABC and me specifically love Trump, then you may have been in tears last night just watching him walk out there. Somebody sent me a text. Oh, Jen Harrison, who recently moved from Suffolk County to Florida. She got out of here. And she said, boy, what a humble man. She can just tell without Donald Trump even opening his mouth how humble he was, how the last couple of days, the events changed him. I don't know if that's true yet. I have no idea. I'm really excited to be in that building, not just tonight, I'll be there tonight, but Thursday night to watch Donald Trump actually address the nation and speak. But you know that he is thankful to God, certainly for sparing his life. He knows the tragedy that took place for those other families. One man dead, of course. Two others, as far as I know, still in critical condition. So Trump, you know that he appreciates the fact that, forgetting about running for president of the United States, and right now he's got the inside track on winning, there's no doubt about it. I mean, Democrats all over the place conceding the election is over, it's done. He's happy to be alive. Hey, Noam, any reports on the other two folks that were shot and in critical condition a couple of days ago?
You know, we haven't really gotten any real updates on them. I know they're still alive, so that's the good news. But past that, we don't have a whole lot of info.
Got nothing, right?
No, it's a little surprising, actually. It's funny you ask me now because I was looking for it this morning, couldn't find a whole lot about it.
Well, here's more good news for Donald Trump. He did not speak last night. He just made that grand entry. He's going to speak on Thursday. But yesterday, right in that same building on that same exact floor, turns out that Donald Trump got all the delegates he needed. So as of yesterday, really, Donald Trump is already the official Republican candidate. Is that not right, Noam?
That is 100% accurate. They took that vote yesterday.
So he's the guy. So he speaks on Thursday, but that's it. Donald Trump is the guy. Now, you're not a big Trump guy, let's be honest. But watching all that, listening to all that, knowing what happened 2 days ago, were you moved even a little?
You know, first of all, I don't know what you're talking about. I've never talked about
Well, you vote Democrat all the time.
How do you know that? Have you seen my voting record?
No, I've heard you speak off the air, of course.
Really?
I don't want to out you. It's not right. But
well, you would be out of me, but all right. How could you not be moved by that moment? He walks out. Of course, the first thing you're looking for is you want to see the injury, and you see the bandage on his right ear, and the place just goes bananas. I mean, you knew it was going to be bananas. You thought maybe he'd wait till Thursday, but I wasn't shocked to see him there last night, and I imagine he may be there every night. But boy,
yeah,
that
we
was
actually, you may remember Corey Lewandowski was walking around here yesterday, and he was not scheduled to come on, but he sat in with me for about 8 minutes. It was a great conversation, and he said he expects Donald Trump to be there all four nights.
Yeah, I think he will be too. And why shouldn't he? It's his convention. He's the one being nominated, and people, that's what people want to see. They want to see him.
Yeah. You know, it's funny you say they want to see him. So, you know, it's very difficult to get down here. I know you heard all day long people like me bitching about the security, the overwhelming security. Today was much easier. Dan Herschel, the great engineer, and I left the hotel once again at 3:30 a.m. local time in Milwaukee. We're an hour behind, and we got here pretty quickly. But I want to get out of here yesterday as soon as I can. So I left probably about 90 minutes after the show. I did a couple of interviews. You'll hear one today, Larry Elder. I saw my friend, the Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson. We had a nice conversation, and I got out of here. So I just started walking because I had no idea how to get out of here. And I ended up on like State Street and Water Street here in Milwaukee. And I get to the corner because I had to walk over a bridge over the Milwaukee River to get to the point where they had cars because there's no traffic in and around these two centers, the Panther Center, Radio Row, and the BikeServe Center, where the actual convention is. So I had to walk a bit, probably about a mile, to get over that bridge to get where cars had access to the street. And what do I see across the street, Noam and Lou and Justin? A huge, I'm not talking about big, I mean huge Palestinian rally. Flags everywhere, music, chanting, hundreds of people. And at one point, I'm waiting for my Uber driver. Had to wait about 15 minutes in the scorching heat. And a guy walks up to me wearing a Free Palestine shirt, and he's making his way across the street to this, you know, rally. He has no idea who I am, and he made the mistake of saying, good morning.
Big mistake.
So I say, do me a favor, don't talk to me. I swear to God,
great.
This is the truth. Yeah, I love it. I say, do me a favor, don't talk to me. And he was very nice. I said, come on. He said, excuse me? I said, yes, sir. I'm Jewish, and I think you're a scumbag.
Swear to God. You did not do that.
On my son, Gabriel, on my dead father's memory, I go, I'm Jewish, and I think you're a scumbag. He goes, oh, really? He goes, you know, there are Jews across the street. I said, yeah, Jews like that, I don't want them. You can have them. He goes, so let me get this straight. He goes, you're okay with babies dying. I said, I walk right up to the guy. I put my finger in his face. I said, you listen to me, you mother effer, okay? The babies that died were the babies that your animals put in the ovens. The people, yes, Palestinians, all Hamas is, are Palestinians gone a bit crazy. They're just, you know, they're just the progressive Palestinians. Hamas is still Palestinian people. They put my babies in the oven. Those are the babies that died. Get the hell away from me. Get across the street with the rest of you Jew haters and get out of my effing face. At that point, he goes to the Secret Service guy. Hey, he threatened me. I said, I didn't threaten him. I said, walk across the street. I didn't say I'm going to punch you in the face. I'm going to kill you. I'm going to knock you out. All I said was, get out of my face and walk across the street. So at that point, I see the guy walk across the street, and he's having conversations with like 20 people. And I'm going, okay, I got to wait for my Uber, or we're going to get to the point where 20 of these bastards walk across the street and try to start with me. So I did warn Secret Service, this may get ugly. He started to laugh, the Secret Service guy, but I couldn't believe the amount of people at this Palestinian rally in Milwaukee. And you say how people love Trump. Part of that Palestinian rally were a bunch of Trump haters with nasty signs and vans that had Trump pictured as the devil. It was the worst corner in America for about 20 minutes yesterday afternoon. How about that, Noam?
Yeah, well, and how far away were they? Because I know normally they keep them pretty far away.
Oh, God, not far. It took me 15 minutes to walk over that bridge over the Milwaukee River from the site of Radio Row and the convention to get to that street corner to get my Uber. Maybe 15 minutes.
Wow. Well, you know, the truth is they're holding their anger for the Democratic convention. It's going to be 10 times as large in Chicago as what you're seeing in Milwaukee.
Well, I think you're right. I do. So we got a big show coming up today. Just wanted you folks to know that it's not exclusive to New York City. This was more contained. They weren't walking up and down the streets. They were in a park, in a little park by the Milwaukee River. But, man, these animals are everywhere. All right, Lou, big show coming up today. We'll have Larry Elder. Curtis Sliwa is back on this Tuesday morning. The brilliant legal mind from Fox News. Great news for Donald Trump yesterday. See you, Jack Smith. That ridiculous Mar-a-Lago case. Looks like that's dead. We'll talk to Greg Jarrett. This guy, Tom Homan, is an amazing guy. Justin, he's actually been on once before. Not his debut, his second appearance. This guy, you want to talk about immigration and the real dangers in this country. They don't come better than Tom Homan. Nicole Malliotakis will be live with me on Radio Row this morning, and a few surprises as well. Day two of the big five-day Sit and Friends in the Morning show. Once again, live from Panther Center, RNC 2024, and I'll be back from Milwaukee right after these short messages.
Gonna have to be a different man. Thou may change me, but I can't trace down.
This is Sid and Friends in the Morning.
77 WABC. Thank you.
I'll be watching you. The Police, one of my favorite groups of all time, and you happen to pick Lou Rubino, my favorite Police song of all time. This is Every Breath You Take. I believe the album was Synchronicity.
Very good.
Thank you. And for a long time, this song held the record for being the number one song on a weekly basis. It owned a whole summer sometime in the early 1980s. I forget the year exactly. So I know it's not Sting's birthday today, but it must be somebody from the Police enjoying a birthday today. What do we got? The great Lou Rufino.
Stuart Copeland, the drummer, is...
Oh, wow.
Oh, my God, he's 78.
Oh, yeah. Well, Sting is in his mid-70s. He looks great. So does Trudy, his wife. But, yeah, well, these bands, man, this is a great song and a great group. It is locally in Milwaukee, 5:33 a.m., just so you folks know. I know it's 6:33 back in New York. So Judge Jeanine was on this show yesterday, and she goes, look, here's the deal. I know this for a fact. There's only been two guys that got clearance, whatever that means, to go to the event last night. What she basically said was it was down to a two-man race for VP. It was down to Marco Rubio and J.D. Vance. And she was right, because J.D. Vance was, in fact, Donald Trump's choice. Now, here's the deal with Vance. It's interesting. My daughter Ava says to me, she's in New York, she texted me, she goes, why would he pick Vance? Vance said horrible things about him, and he did. You folks may not know this, but at one point, J.D. Vance actually said about Donald Trump back in 2016, he's America's Hitler. Now, let me say something. That's as bad as it gets. Comparisons to Adolf Hitler are as bad as it gets. He also said he's cultural heroin. He called him noxious. I mean, he was really nasty to Trump, really nasty. And I said, well, let me remind you, Ava, she's still young, that during that first debate between Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, Kamala Harris almost said intimated, she did more than that, basically called Joe Biden a racist. Well, if you're Joe Biden, why would you pick Kamala Harris as your running mate if she, in front of a huge national audience, inferred or even said he was a racist? And the answer is simple. These guys don't care. Now, Nikki Haley is one thing. Nikki spent the better part of the last year being the female version of Chris Christie and just hammering Donald Trump. J.D. Vance has now been a fan of Trump for years, so all that stuff is behind him. It's kind of like when I told Trump I voted for Hillary. I told Trump that. I said, in 2016, I thought you ran the most sophomoric and dumbest campaign I've ever seen. Here we were after 8 years of Obama in all kinds of trouble, and you're talking about building a wall, wearing a hat, nicknaming your opponents. But then I got over that. And for the last 8 years, you're not going to find anybody more enthusiastic about Donald Trump than me. And he appreciates that. Same thing with Vance. These guys don't care. But the truth is, we've been talking an awful lot the last couple of days how New York is in play. And J.D. Vance does not help Donald Trump in our city. You know, he's a guy that is very strict when it comes to abortion. I'm pro-choice. He's not. He is not for gay marriage. So at least in New York, and Noam, you know this, this VP pick will not help Donald Trump. But Trump is on record on this show saying, look, Sid, the VP basically doesn't really matter. He makes a big deal out of it. It's a big show. But when you think about it, Mike Pence and J.D. Vance, right? None of the big names, none of the women we were hoping for. But you would agree, Noam, that in New York, J.D. Vance is going to piss off a lot of people.
I guess so, but I think it does a better job of exciting his base. He's a young guy. He's 39 years old. He's the future of the party. And if you read that book, Hillbilly Elegy, it is a great book. I mean, it is really a rags to riches story that I think a lot of people can relate to. I mean, he grew up essentially a hillbilly, and was able to get to Yale Law School, graduate, venture capitalist, now a senator. I mean, it's a fantastic story that I think people will, that a lot of Americans don't know about and will soon learn about. And I think that it will endear him to a lot of people.
Maybe you're right. I don't see it. I think New York is a disaster. But look, they're already talking about J.D. Vance because, you know, whoever Trump picked, that was going to be the odds-on favorite to be the nominee in 2028. So maybe J.D. Vance assumes that now. Maybe not. Maybe Ron DeSantis is back, or Haley, or somebody else. But the buzz around town was 2028, the ticket could be J.D. Vance. And you ready for this? Donald Trump Jr.
I saw that. Yeah.
Both young guys, and Donald Trump Jr. was very complimentary of J.D. Vance yesterday. Most Republicans were. In fact, this guy, who was a tremendous, not good, tremendous college football coach, especially at Auburn, he's now a great senator from the state of Alabama, Tommy Tuberville. He had this to say about J.D. Vance. Lewis, this is cut number one.
Awesome. I've been on J.D.'s side for ever since he got in the Senate. I hate to lose him in the Senate. He's awesome. He'll be a very good vice president and a very good future president of the United States.
Do you think this boosts his chances in November, in addition to what we've already seen this week?
As like I've always told people around me, and even President Trump, I don't think anybody's going to enhance. He's going to do what he's going to do. But I tell you one thing, he is going to be a great addition to the ticket.
He basically said what I just said. No one's going to enhance his chances. No one's really going to help him. I think the VP choice actually hurts him more than helps him. But we'll see whether that's the case or not with J.D. Vance. You know, folks, later on tonight, I am heading to the convention center. I'll be there tonight and Thursday night. And Ben Carson, our old friend Ben Carson, is having a big party here tonight. Ben Carson spoke about J.D. Vance. Lou Ravino, this is cut number two.
Yes, well, I was very pleased with this pick. I read J.D. Vance's book, and the things that he's been through gives him a very wide spectrum of the American society to deal with. And I think he'll be a very good pick. He's very articulate. He's very smart. He's young. He's energetic. And quite frankly, you know, we are so fortunate that Donald Trump survived over the weekend. He will win no matter who is his vice president.
See, he said the same thing. He will win no matter what. Tommy Tuberville said the same thing. So, Noam, when Donald Trump tells me that on his show, you heard me parrot it. You heard Tuberville parrot it. You heard Carson parrot it. Here is Vivek Ramaswamy. Here's what he had to say.
I think he will be an outstanding vice president, actually. I think he's not going to be a good vice president. He'll be an outstanding vice president. I think President Trump and our country will be lucky to have him. I will certainly do everything in my power to make sure the Trump-Vance ticket is successful. I want to think about this, but I'm inclined to say this could be the single most formidable political ticket in my lifetime. And I want to see them succeed at a scale that not only makes the Republican Party thrive, but makes the country thrive.
Watching Dan Scavino. Dan's a friend of mine. He's very, very close with Trump. And he put a picture on his Instagram yesterday. They were painting the airplane. They put Vance's name on the airplane. So it says Trump Vance 2024. And, of course, as you would expect, the president of the United States, Joe Biden, who I guess when he called Trump after Trump was shot on Saturday must have said something nice. Jill Biden supposedly called Melania. She must have said something nice, but they're back to their old stuff already, criticizing Trump, criticizing Republicans, and Biden criticized the selection of J.D. Vance. This is President Biden on Trump's VP selection.
The clone of Trump on the issue. A clone of Trump on the issue. So I don't see any difference.
Don't see a difference. You know, he's actually wrong. He's such a stupid old bastard. He's really not Trump on the issues. Believe it or not, Donald Trump is a lot less conservative than J.D. Vance. Let me remind folks that for the better part of 66 years, 66, Donald Trump was basically a Democrat. He was pro-choice like I am. He was a Democrat. living in New York City. Then, of course, he ran for president, and he became a Republican, and he is certainly a Republican, but he's not nearly as conservative. For example, J.D. Vance, he's not for the exceptions for abortion, which include incest, rape. Donald Trump is. So Noam and Lou and Justin, when Joe Biden says J.D. Vance, same on the issues as Donald Trump, he either doesn't know any better or he should know better, because the truth is, you know this, Noam, J.D. Vance much more conservative than Trump.
Yeah, not even close. And, you know, what's interesting in that final decision when he was trying to decide, apparently it came down to Rubio and Vance. And Donald Trump apparently had a hard time with the whole idea of the residency issue. Constitutionally, you can't have both candidates from the same state.
But, I mean, we talked about that. I kept saying, you know, Donald Trump is not going to change his address to Bedminster, New Jersey.
He didn't want to do it. He
right, thought, and certainly not New York. So it would have meant Marco Rubio basically buying a condo in Atlanta.
And that wasn't going to happen. But, you know, of course, the argument was that Rubio could bring in more of the Latino vote. And maybe that was a mistake on the part of Donald Trump by not choosing him.
I think it was a mistake. I think Marco Rubio was the better choice. I think Marco Rubio is more prepared to be president right now than J.D. Vance, the freshman senator. So I do think it was a mistake. But again, you know, you look what Trump did last time. He went ultra, ultra conservative with Mike Pence. And now he's done it again. Maybe he feels like, you know, people know that he's not ultra conservative on every issue. And J.D. Vance helps to fill out the blanks. All right. Well, we'll take a short break. I know we'll get to Lori Blanchard, get some traffic. But Larry Elder was a radio star. You may remember when they recalled Gavin Newsom, the governor of California. Larry Elder became his biggest threat. And then Larry ran for president but got no respect. Black man got no respect when he ran for president. We're going to discuss all those issues. He's actually a very, very funny guy. So Larry Elder is coming up next. We'll get traffic from Lori Blanchard as we continue day number two, live from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, here on Radio Row at the Panther Center. This is RNC 2024.
This is Sid on Sports.
Oh, my goodness!
Sponsored by Peerless Boilers on 77 WABC.
Justin Ellick here with your bottom of the hour sports update, sponsored by Pete Morgan and Peerless Boilers. Go to peerlessboilers.com, pavilion tankless.com to find a dealer near you. They are the world's best built boilers on the diamond at Globe Life Field in Arlington, Texas. 2024 MLB All-Star festivities began last night in the form of this year's Home Run Derby. After we got through that abysmal national anthem, the Dodgers' Teoscar Hernandez edged out Kansas City Royal Bobby Witt Jr. by just one homer in the finals of an otherwise unremarkable derby. Congrats to Hernandez. The opening of the All-Star break also brought some news regarding two of New York's biggest stars on the diamond, regarding the aforementioned Alonso, or not aforementioned, but he was in that home run derby last night. He was actually early exit for him, hitting only 12 home runs in that opening round. But regarding Alonso, he insisted yesterday that the next 2 weeks are pivotal in persuading the Mets front office to add players for a postseason run. Alonso, an impending free agent, understands the stakes better than anyone. He knows he could be a trade candidate if the Mets stumble out of the break. Reaching the playoffs seemed like a fantasy when just about everything was going wrong for New York, and the Mets were 24-35 on June 2nd. They're 25-11 since then, buoyed by a suddenly explosive lineup with Alonso in the middle of it, and it could stay that way if they keep on winning after the break. In pinstripes, Juan Soto was swarmed for the third straight year at All-Star Media Day, wearing a different jersey on each occasion to field questions about his unknown future. With free agency looming mere months away, Soto said he's tired of playing dress-up and is looking forward to, quote, wearing one for a long time. Soto's short time in a Yankees jersey has thus far been a resounding success. He has become an instant fan favorite by slashing .295, .426, .558 with 23 home runs, a league-leading 79 walks, and a swagger that is ideal for New York City. He has done it batting in front of fellow All-Star starter Aaron Judge, creating a historic duo that has fueled the Yankees to a 58-40 record. Soto's production earned him his fourth straight All-Star appearance, and surprisingly his first as a starter before his 26th birthday. Whether his fifth All-Star game appearance will be as a Yankee will almost certainly be decided after a high-stakes offseason bidding war. When asked if he sees himself as a Yankee beyond this season, Soto said, quote, "Who wouldn't want to be with a team that wins? For me, while you're winning on a team, it's always good to be there and be a part of it." Yankees fans happy to hear that from number 22. Speaking of tonight's All-Star game, first pitch is scheduled for 8 p.m. from Arlington. The National League will be starting Pittsburgh rookie sensation Paul Skeens on the bump against American League starter and Baltimore Oriole Corbin Burns. That's sports sponsored by Pete Morgan of Peerless Boilers. Go to peerlessboilers.com, pavilionandtankless.com. Find a dealer near you. They're the world's best-built boilers. I'm Justin Ellick on 77 WABC.
Sid and Friends in the Morning,
77 WABC.
Back here live on Radio Row in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Day two of 5 days of reporting from the RNC 2024. Sitting next to me, another guy I've gotten to know pretty well over the last couple of years. I like this guy a lot. First of all, I'm a radio guy. He's an excellent, excellent radio guy. West Coast radio guy. You're pretty good. And then, of course, he ran for president as well. Wasn't treated fairly.
And for governor.
Wasn't treated fairly. We'll get to that.
Right.
But is a very smart man and a likable man. And that is my friend Larry Elder. Larry, good morning. How are you?
Say hello to the black face of white supremacy. Nice to be here, Sid. Whenever I'm on your show, I feel like I have to scream because you have such energy.
Yes. I do have a lot of energy. Yes.
Larry, how's everything going? I'm good, Sid.
That's because you folks in L.A. are so laid back.
So laid back. It's the weather.
It's and all the weed you guys smoke.
It's the weather and the politics.
You know, you almost did become governor when they started mentioning his name to replace Biden. I was like, please bring him on. He's got nice hair, but he's one of the worst governors ever. But when they had to recall Newsom, you were the guy that had the big lead.
Well, that's right. It was a two-part deal, Sid. The first part is, do you want this man recalled? And if the answer was yes by 50% plus one, whoever got the most votes on the replacement side would have won. I had 3.5 million votes on the replacement side, 49% of all the votes, the same percentage that Schwarzenegger got in 2003. But Newsom got 7 million. I got outspent 10 to 1, and it turned the whole thing around. But there was a brief shining moment where they were scared to death that I might have replaced him, which would have changed everything.
I thought you were going to get it. I really did. And then, of course, you ended up running for president.
I did.
And you were in my studios on 3rd Avenue.
I was.
You were. And, in fact, I gave out the website a couple of times to get you some cash. And you were trying to get on stage for the debates, and they screwed you.
And I should have gotten on. I had to get 3 polls where I was at 1% or better, which I did. And I submitted them on time. I get a phone call from Ronna McDaniel, then the chairwoman of the GOP. And she said, well, you can't use one of the polls because it's affiliated with the Trump campaign. I said, which poll? She said, Rasmussen. I said, what does that have to do with me? She said, read the rules, and the rules stipulate, to be sure, that any poll affiliated with any campaign cannot be used by any other campaign. Then Rasmussen put out a tweet about an hour later and said, we're not affiliated with Trump. There's no reason why Larry Elder can't use us. We then submitted a 4th poll, Sid, and what did she say? You submitted it too late. Well, I didn't realize I needed to submit 4, so I only submitted the 3, which is what I was required to submit.
Interesting. So if Michael Whatley and my friend Laura Trump were in charge then like they are now, would you have been on stage?
I would not have gotten shafted. And I hired a lawyer. He's the former chair of the Federal Elections Commission. He said by failing to apply the criteria fairly to you, what the RNC did essentially was give a 2-minute infomercial to the 8 candidates who got up there, which would have been worth about $100 million in airtime. So we filed a complaint with the FEC, and I said, if by 2 o'clock on the day of the debate I went to Milwaukee, you have not changed your mind, I'm going to file this complaint. So we did. It's being adjudicated right now, so we'll find out what happens.
Wow. This is Larry Elder.
I may come back with $100 million, in which case I'll never do your show again. Are you kidding me?
That's it? You're done?
I'm done. $100 million?
No, you're not about money.
I'll do it from my yacht. I'll do it from my boat.
That sounds good to me.
Right.
It sounds good to me. So you, but you've always, your relationship with Donald Trump is what?
It's great. And I never said one negative thing about him when I ran. I ran for a couple of reasons. I wanted to talk about the awful education K-12 that kids are getting in the inner city. 13 public high schools, just to give you one example, said in Baltimore, 0% of the kids can do math at grade level. Yet the Democratic Party opposes school choice.
Did you say 0%?
0%. 52 government schools in Chicago, 0% of the kids can do math at grade level. All these schools are located in the inner city. It is outrageous. Yet the party elites, whether it's Obama or Biden or Kamala Harris, send their own kids to private school, but they do not want to give you school choice. That's one of the reasons I ran. The other one was we spend money. Both parties do. Our side does. Their side does. The only way to stop it is with an amendment to fix spending to a certain percentage of the GDP. And I was going to run to campaign for that. And those are pretty much the reasons that I ran. I also wanted to talk about the fact that the welfare state has destroyed the family. 70% of black kids today enter the world without a father in the home, married to the mother, up from 25% back in 65. What happened in 65? Lyndon Johnson launched a so-called war on poverty, a good Democrat. And since then, we've incentivized women to marry the government, incentivized men to abandon their financial and moral responsibility. And that's why I ran.
I'm glad you said all that, because when I say my biggest issue with the black community, and let's be honest, okay, for a small percentage of people, there are way too many crimes committed in the black community. And I believe the reason is, well, there's a bunch of reasons, but the biggest reason is
no dads. Lack of fathers.
That's it.
In LA, we have these smash and grabs where a bunch of kids run in and 30, 40 of them in one time and steal a bunch of stuff.
San Francisco, too, that has shut down Neiman Marcus.
Now, some of them have masks on, but a lot of them don't. And from what I can tell, a lot of these smash and grabs are done by black kids. Now, if that happened, if I were involved, Sid, I'd be more afraid of what my father would say to me than what my cops would say to me.
Fantastic.
They're afraid of neither. The cops are pulling back, the fathers are not there, and you have absolute chaos.
You know, there's a couple of guys I know in this party. Byron Donalds, a terrific guy out of Florida. Burgess Owens. Burgess, who, of course, was a great defensive back for the Jets. He's
here
out
comes
in Utah.
Trouble. Here comes trouble, Terrence.
Yeah, there's Terrence. I like Terrence,
God.
Too.
He's the worst.
No, he's the best. Come on. But,
between Terrence and Colin Kaepernick, which one would you pick?
I'm not a big Colin fan.
That's what I'm saying.
I was in New Orleans for that Super Bowl when Joe Flacco and the Ravens beat him. But I mentioned these other African-American men or black men because they're on my side. They're on my team, right? So when Larry Elder, he's a black man, folks, he comes out and he's critical
By
of the
way,
community.
I never use the term African-American.
It's
a ridiculous term.
I know.
I'm from America. I was born in Los Angeles.
I know.
You know, my family's been here longer than most white people's
families
have. But ridiculous African-American.
Well, thank you.
What the hell is that?
I have no idea. So here's a black guy, Larry Elder, sitting with me. And I know that other black people, they must be furious with you over the years. I could just imagine what they've called you. Is it as bad as I think, or maybe not that bad?
No, Sid, it's gotten better over the years. I remember when I first came on the air, every other black caller who called me an Uncle Tom or a sellout.
They did.
But little by little, I started talking about the family, started talking about crime, started talking about the awful performance of schools. And little by little, they began to change their mind. I'll tell you when it happened. About a year on the air, I'm walking down the street. A couple of brothers are sitting on a fence smoking cigarettes. One of them says, Larry Elder, come over here. I said, Sid, well, if he had a gun, he's going to shoot me. He would have done it by now. I cannot run the bullet. Might as well go over. So I went over. He goes, let me tell you something about you. I've been listening to you for about 4 or 5 months now. At first, I hated your guts. But now I realize you ain't doing nothing but telling people to work hard and stop whining and making excuses. You know what you are? You're like castor oil. You don't taste good going down, but it's good for you. Keep it up.
Oh, that's great.
That's when I
knew.
Where
was this? L.A.?
L.A., yeah.
Oh, that is fantastic.
That's when I knew I had turned a corner.
No, that's true.
Yeah.
So, but for me, it's scarier. I'll tell you why. I don't think Kamala Harris is a smart person. I think she's stupid.
Dumb as a box of rocks.
Well, thank you. I know she's gotten to this unbelievable level, but something tells me that Mayor Brown can probably tell me why. But if I say that, I run the risk of being called a racist.
And sexist.
And sexist.
There you go.
Yeah, you're right, both.
A twofer, yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah.
But that's how I feel, and I'm not going to change my mind. So you agree with me, obviously.
I do. However, in the event that Biden is switched out for Kamala Harris, I think we would be ill-advised to be cocky about it. She's never lost a race when she's been on the ticket. She ran for DA in the Bay Area, won twice. She ran for AG in California, won twice. She ran for U.S. Senator, she won. She ran for president, but she dropped out before the first contest. She ran on the ballot with Joe Biden, and she won. She's never lost an election when she's been on the ballot. And a lot of black women love, love, love Kamala Harris, and they are the most loyal part of the Democratic base. And they will be livid if Biden is not the nominee and she is passed over.
No, she's got to be the one. She's going to be the one. But I don't think Biden's going to back out. Was she a good AG in California for real?
I didn't pay that much attention to her record. I can't say that I know. All I know is that she made a joke out of prosecuting marijuana users, and then when she ran for president, joked about the fact that that I think she said she smoked marijuana.
Right, right.
And her father also from my father's from Jamaica. We, you know, marijuana. Ha ha. While throwing people in jail for dealing.
Yeah.
So she got called out by Tulsi Gabbard on that, and her campaign never recovered from that.
Never recovered. Yeah. So on the way out, and it's great to catch up with you. You're just you're a terrific guy.
On the way out doesn't mean I'm gone.
You have to go home now.
I'm out of here.
No, I mean back to California. You have to leave.
On the way out. All right.
Yeah.
It's kind of very subtle. I saw that.
That's it. You're done. You got me and Terrence. You're good enough. Right. Tell me this. You like Trump. Saturday, I ask all my guests this week, and people specifically that like Trump and Trump likes them. Me personally, I had just gotten to Milwaukee, just walked inside my hotel room,
right,
put my bag down, put on Fox News, and I was in tears. Where was Larry Elder on Saturday? What did you think?
I was in the hotel. We had just checked in, and we went to a little gathering where there were other delegates from the California delegation, and then all of a sudden somebody just cried out. Watching television, we went over, we started watching. For a moment, I thought he had been killed.
Me too.
For one moment.
Me too.
You know, you're an NFL guy. The immaculate reception, the greatest catch.
Franco Harris against the Oakland Raiders.
This is the immaculate protection.
Oh, I like that.
And if you use it, I get 10%.
I like that.
Yes, plus credit.
Did you grow up in L.A.? Where'd you grow up?
Born and raised in L.A.
Oh, so are you a Ram fan, a Raider? What are you? A Charger fan?
I'm a Cleveland Browns fan. I lived in Cleveland for 17 years.
Oh, you did?
And I began adopting the Browns and the Indians. Now Guardians.
Right.
And, of course, the...
So those were the Browns days with Brian Sipe.
The Cavaliers. Yeah.
Not the Jim Brown days.
Right.
And, you're too young.
Right. And who's the other quarterback with the...
Bernie Kosar.
Bernie Kosar.
He's a dear friend of mine.
Yeah.
He was on this show last week. He actually has liver failure and Parkinson's.
Wow.
It's a horrible story.
Yeah. Yeah.
Lastly, Larry Elder, will you run for office again?
Speaking of Larry Elder's podcast, which you haven't mentioned, I do that once...
You know why? Because you never invite me on.
I do that once a week. Nobody's on. It's just me talking
and
doing some videos once a week. It's about 500,000 views. What was your question?
Is it really 500,000 views?
Yeah, in 1 week. 1 hour.
How long is this podcast?
It's hour-long podcast.
An hour long.
Once a week.
When does it come out? What day?
It comes out on Saturdays. 2 million views a month.
Well, I can see it. Larry,
just four shows.
You're a brilliant
guy.
Just
four shows.
And you're funny.
And it's entertaining. Yes.
And it's very good. And you do just politics or a bunch of everything?
I don't wear pants when I'm doing this show. I think that accounts for a lot of the female viewers.
Oh, yes. God. Well, you are a very handsome man.
Thank you.
So will you run for politics again?
I've given at the office. I'm done. I ran for governor. I ran for president.
That's a shame. I think you'd be a great politician. I mean that sincerely. I'm not trying to be nice.
And it's a good chance you can't offer me anything.
It's
a good chance.
You don't even have guests on your podcast.
Breaking news on your show, Sid. It's a good chance I'm going to go back to radio.
Is that right?
I've been off for almost 2 years. I was with Salem for a long time. Salem and I are in discussions, and there's a good chance that I may go back to radio sooner than later.
I love that, too. Now, would that be local or national?
National, please.
Oh, that's great.
I was in 300 markets. About a million and a half people heard me every day for 3 hours.
Look at you.
Yes.
Stay out of New York. I'll beat your ass, okay?
Mm-hmm. All right. Sounds good to me.
I really do enjoy you immensely. I think you're brilliant. You're funny. And I'm glad I got a chance to see you this week.
That is the comical stylings of one Larry
there
Elder.
You go. I'm here all week. 2-drink minimum.
Try the meal.
Tip all the waitresses. All right.
We'll be back live from Milwaukee right after these words. Thank you, Larry. Where we are, what we're doing. I'm with you, that's I wish I could sing it to you. Oh no, I wish I could sing it to you. Oh, oh.
Live from the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, here's Sid Rosenberg.
The RNC is back in town. Everybody gather around. We're taking back America. With the best Republicans in the field, we're laying out a better deal. We're taking back America. President Trump will be the highlight. With Sid Rosenberg right by his side, we're taking back America. So for all things RNC, tune in to WABC. We're taking back America.
How about my guy right there, the naked cowboy, that's almost become a weekly incident there in Times Square, where the icon, he really is an icon and a legend, much like my next guest, Curtis Sliwa, the icon, the legend, the naked cowboy, finds a way to sing a song that includes me, and that one there talking about me being live where I am this morning, day two of five shows from the RNC 2024, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And the naked cowboy is right. We are taking America back. Curtis, who does a great job on this show, he's on every day because he really is great, has the Rip and Read noon to one every weekday afternoon. And, of course, he hosts all the overnight shows on the weekends. And I know Curtis is great. Part of the reason why he's great is because he listens intently to the first hour before he comes on. And I know he heard me tell the story about how yesterday when my show was over and I was making my way back to the hotel, I had to stand on a street corner on a very hot day. It's much cooler here in Wisconsin. In fact, we're not going to hit 80 degrees for the rest of my trip. But yesterday was about 88 and sunny. I'm sweating bullets. And right across the street from where I was standing, which was State and Water Street, there you go, was a huge, huge Palestinian rally. I got into words with a guy. Secret Service was right there. Hi, Nicole. Good morning. So, Curtis, I wanted you to know, I know you know this because you know this country as well as anybody, that Palestinian rallies and all this hate is not exclusive to New York City.
Oh, hell no. And in fact, you didn't take my advice, Sid. I said, take the 16th Street Viaduct out of the green zone there. Go up to Old North Milwaukee, the heart of the hood, and go to Smoke and Bones and have a great meal instead of hanging out with everybody at the Capitol Grill. But you don't listen to me, Sid. You don't listen to me.
You're right. I didn't listen, and I should have listened. I'm sorry, I was actually listening to Curtis and talking to Nicole Malliotakis at the same time, but I...
Wait a second. Hold on a second. Who's more important here, me or Nicole Malliotakis?
You want the honest answer?
Yes.
Nicole!
Oh, okay, all right.
She's a member of Congress. She's in Milwaukee.
It doesn't matter. You're holding it down there, and you guys are doing a great job, Sid, you and the WABC team. But you got to give credit where credit is due. Me and Noam are holding it down here since 7 o'clock Saturday night.
No, listen, I'm glad you brought that up, and I mean this sincerely, because the job that you did, and you've done this before, Curtis. You know, I say this not because I need you. I don't need you. I love you, and I think you're great on the air, and you've done this many times before. You can go 24 hours, 36 hours. Nobody else can do that in this business. Even I can do it, but nobody better than you. And the job you did hopping on the air after Trump got shot, interviewing me first but spending 2 days talking about it, that was about as good a job as anybody I've ever heard on radio. Very reminiscent, Curtis, of Imus after 9/11.
But let me tell you something. Noam did the heavy lifting. He was the first to find the address of this shooter, Thomas Matthew Crooks. He did a deep dive. He had his son helping him. I had Nancy helping me. We went right to work when there was that press conference that said nothing at 10 o'clock at night, in which the special security would not show up whatsoever. And so he did the deep dive, and we've been able to find out more about Thomas Matthew Crooks since. Are you aware that his two parents are professional counselors and actually go out and help families who have dysfunctional kids?
It's funny. I did know that. And first of all, getting back to Noam, you don't have to sell me on how great Noam is. I say all the time to my dear friend Ben Meverack, who runs 1010 Wins, but listens to me every morning, that Noam is the best in the business. And it wasn't my fault that Bernie got him fired years ago. Of course, I had nothing to do with that. But yes, I was aware that that's what the parents did. Their own kid, who's now dead, and thank God he's dead, tried to kill the president, and yet, yes, that is the parents' job. Pretty ironic, yes, Curtis?
Yep, and the school counselor at the high school he graduated from, Bethel Park High School, said he was as quiet as a church mouse, respectful. He had a few friends, And the kids were not calling him names. They weren't bullying him, as we heard in the first reports. He was not political. In that school, the kids are able to wear their Trump paraphernalia, their Biden paraphernalia. He never did any of that. And now the investigators, the FBI, said they cracked his phone. They didn't find anything. Sid, I ask you, would an untrained 20-year-old dweeb, nerd, dork, goober, geek have the ability to plan and execute so yes. complex a plan yes. almost yes. to the point of success? Come yes. on now.
Yes. I'm sorry. I've seen way too many kids with firearms, with explosives, whether it's Columbine, other schools.
Hold on. In yeah. Columbine, they trained. This guy tried out for his rifle team in high school. He went one day, he fired a shot from the seventh lane. It ricocheted off the first lane. He said, get the hell out of here. You're the worst shot we've ever seen in our life. That very morning, he goes and buys 50 rounds of ammunition at Home Depot and a metal ladder. He puts the metal ladder up against the building where there's a sniper team inside. There are no security officers on the roof. Then starts to do a belly crawl. Everybody sees him. They say, there's a gunman on the roof. There's yeah. a gunman on the roof. Another cop gets up on that ladder, and instead of battling him and attracting attention, he runs in fright, this cop, right down the ladder. And then the sheriff defends the guy. Says, I would have done the same thing. This reminds me of Uvalde and Parkland High School, remember?
Yes.
Where they refused to go in and engage these gunmen. What is up with these cops?
Well, I don't know. And both of those, of course, school shootings, Nicholas Cruz in Parkland and the kid at Uvalde. So I guess, short order here, Curtis, are you insinuating, which I am not going to do, I talked about this yesterday with Craig Kelly, I'm not a conspiracy theorist, I draw the line when it gets a bit crazy for me, I am not going to call this an inside job, but are you calling this an inside job?
You're damn right. I'm asking all of our listeners all over the United States. This is the most listened to morning program from coast to coast. Would an untrained 20-year-old have the ability to plan and execute this complex plan solo almost to the point of success? Come on, Sid.
I didn't think it was all that complex. He had a ladder. He had a gun. I don't like the fact that he was able to pull it off and get 8 shots off, but it's not like it was all that complex. In fact, it was too easy.
There's a sniper team in that same building for 30 minutes.
Is it not possible that they were just inept or not paying attention?
Whoa. The old Barney Fife of Mayberry RFD with Sheriff Taylor?
Look, Tom Homan is as good as it gets when it comes to these types of things, like you are. He's going to join me at 8:15. I'm interested in his perspective, but I do want to tackle some local stuff with you. I was reading the Daily News yesterday, only because it comes to my phone, and the Daily News yesterday was talking about what looks like may be a very crowded primary for your good friend, Mayor Eric Adams.
Eric Adams, swagger man with no plan. Are you kidding? Of course there are going to be more Democrats jumping in. They smell blood in the water. He's at 24% acceptability in the polls. Joe Biden, who's falling and he can't get up, is at 38%. Kathy Hochul, and she's Hochul because she's full of nonsense, is at 34%. Eric Adams is at 24%. So, sure, all the Democrats are jumping in. They're going to team up with ranked choice voting. If he survives in a primary, he could well end up being a one-term mayor if, in fact, he doesn't go to jail for political corruption and has the old Sheldon Silver cell up in Otisville.
Yeah, that seems like a real possibility every day, more and more. And again, you and I just talked about this a couple of days ago. The rumor that may be a reality that former Governor Andrew Cuomo steps in, and I have been saying for the longest time, because I've met with Cuomo twice, that he is going to do it. You were also saying that, but you pulled back on Friday.
No. I couldn't believe the double team. First O'Reilly, a Cuomo sexual. Oh, Chris Cuomo. Oh, my God, the greatest journalist. And then you. Oh, Andrew Evil Eyes Cuomo. What have you guys become, Cuomo sexuals? What are you, Cuomo Eyes? Both of you. O'Reilly. Oh, you should see Chris Cuomo.
Listen. First of all, I think Chris Cuomo is the biggest asshole in media today. So forget about Chris.
Yeah, well, tell that to O'Reilly who wants to.
I did. But Andrew, listen, I got to hear more. I've said it about the nursing homes and obviously the bail reform. I'm not there with Andrew yet. But I will tell you this. I speak to Republicans. I speak to some Democrats. They don't even like Andrew, but they all admit one thing. As bad as he is, as corrupt as he is, and maybe he should have gone to jail, he is still a much better leader than Eric Adams.
Oh, yeah. He destroyed the state, so now let's give him a chance to destroy the city. Let me get on to the vice.
Hold on. He can't destroy the city between de Blasio and Adams. It's already been destroyed. So the question is, could it get worse?
Well, yes. He'll dance the horror and the tarantella on our grave. Now, you mentioned J.D. Vance. You know my position. I never trust anybody with three names. James David Vance. Number two, you had mentioned this text in which J.D. Vance referred to Donald Trump as Hitler back in 2016.
He actually called him the American Hitler.
As was provided by, and this is where this guy is going to become famous, Josh McLaurin, who is a state senator in the old Jimmy Carter district in Georgia. That was his roommate in law school. Now remember, when Al Gore was chosen by Bill Clinton, right away they did the deep dive. Who was Al Gore's roommate at Harvard? Turned out it was Tommy Lee Jones, who played Clay Shaw in JFK. How ironic is that? This guy, Josh McLaurin, knows where all of J.D. Vance's bones are buried and where they're buried. I guarantee you, he is going to become the star of MSNBC and everybody that wants to take a whack at Trump through J.D. Vance. Bad choice. This guy is bad on abortion. Should have went with Marco Rubio. You get more than 50% of the Latino vote. Slam dunk, you're president again.
I agree, and I said the same exact thing this morning. I think specifically in New York, J.D. Vance becomes a disaster. If you really thought Donald Trump had a chance in New York, Vance kills Trump in New York. But I guess he went with his kid. You know, Donald Trump Jr. kind of looks like J.D. Vance. He's got that facial hair. They've got a very similar political philosophies. And I think the dad went with the son's instinct here with J.D. Vance. But I'm with you. I think the much better choice was Marco Rubio.
Exactly. Instead of all these McWhitey Whiteys, I'm looking there in the gallery there. I see all white people at the RNC. I see up on the stage all white people.
Not only the RNC, I got to tell you, I'm downtown. This is a true story. I went for dinner at the Capitol Grill, Curtis, a couple nights ago. I saw one black guy, and he actually asked me for money at the end of the night. He was clearly homeless. I'm staying about 20 minutes west of downtown at a very nice DoubleTree in Milwaukee, Brookfield. I don't see any black people.
Oh,
and then
should.
I went to Dan Herschel and Kevin Drosch on Saturday before we all got here, went to the Milwaukee Brewers baseball game. They didn't see one black person inside the stadium.
Oh, but see, you're not in the hood. You're not where I made my bones. Up at the Smoking Bones in Old North Milwaukee near Sherman Park. They got the green zone down there. But it reminds me, Miller Park. Remember 2002 home run derby, the steroid derby, in which it was slamming Sammy Sosa. He had 5 home runs over 500 feet, 8 home runs over 480 feet, and he lost to Jason Giambi, who was also roided up. They had Barry Bonds. They had Alex Rodriguez, Alex A-Roid Rodriguez. Man, remember he was launching monster shots.
That was a great time for baseball. And I argue with Dog about this all the time. Russo, I don't want to hear about steroids. If not for that majestic summer between McGuire and Sosa of 1997, we'd all be watching cricket with Bruce Blakeman on Long Island.
By the way, with all the white people at the RNC in Milwaukee, I mean, it's McWhitey Whiteys, it's Whitelandia. Whiter than any of them now is slamming Sammy Sosa. He is the whitest guy in the world.
It's true. He looks ridiculous.
I'm surprised he's not up there on the stage. Can you find me some black people and Hispanic people and Asian people, please?
I can. I've got Byron Donalds. I've got Not many Asian people. Nicole Malliotakis is Cuban and Latino.
Oh, please, come on, come on. Yeah, come on, yeah. We can do better than that. Right after that great rally at Cortona Park, yeah. Donald Trump attracts 20,000 mostly black and Hispanics, MAGA followers, and I'm looking at a convention in which, can I find a black person, Hispanic person, or Asian person? Now, you know the Democratic convention, man, it's going to be like black, oh, yeah. white, Hispanic, Asian, good gay, point. Lesbian, transgender.
Good for them, right?
Yeah.
That's all they care about. That's all they care about.
I understand,
about.
But I mean, give me a little this. Color. You know, I'm whited out. I use white out when I wanted to change my report card, when I wanted to fool my mom and dad. It's the white out convention. Come on.
Listen, Tim Scott is a black guy, too. Just
yeah, I know. You're counting. Why don't you go into the tanning salon, get up on the stage, because when you go to WABC and you Google black sports broadcasters, your name comes up first, your picture comes up first.
I know. It's hilarious. And I'm so dark here, too. Everybody sits down with me is like, oh, my God. You got people here from Michigan, Wisconsin. They're pale as can be.
By the way, do they think you're a hitman also, like Glacier?
Yes.
Out of Arizona.
Yes. Yeah, they all do. They're like, wow, you look like the real New York type of guy, you know, that type of guy. I'm like, yeah, that's who I am. Curtis, great job, buddy. Great to have you back today. I did miss you yesterday. You are amazing. We'll all be listening at noon this afternoon for the Rip and Weed. Do it again tomorrow, Curtis Sliwa. Thank you so much.
We'll keep doing the deep dive here, me and Noam, on this loner gunman that everybody wants to say did it by himself. Get the hell out of here. An untrained 20-year-old has the ability to plan and execute this plan almost to the point of success, and you're all going to accept the FBI Secret Service's report on this? I don't trust them. I do not trust them when it comes to security of our country.
All right, fair enough. A lot more to come. The brilliant legal mind from Fox News, a major win for Donald Trump yesterday. The documents case dismissed. We'll talk to Greg Jarrett. We're going to talk to Wisconsin Congressman Brian Stile coming up in New York this morning. Tom Homan's going to be here. Nicole Malliotakis and more. Day 2, Radio Row. Sid and Friends in the morning. Exclusively, Talk Radio 77 WABC.
WABC.
This is Sid and Friends in the Morning.
No, I get by with a little help from my friends.
Well, it's been a pretty somber mood, right? I mean, my father got shot at. Somebody took off half his ear. But I can tell you, my father's never been more determined than he is right now. He is, he's more determined to make America great again. He's got incredible fighting spirit, no different than when he's pumping his hand in the air with blood running across his face. And I'm really proud of him. I've never been more proud as a child, as a son. He's a remarkable human being. He's got backbone that's unlike any person I've ever met before. And as I said before, we're going to win, and we're going to restore prosperity to this country, and he's going to make America great again.
on the Riverside. That, of course, my friend Eric Trump talking about his dad last night at the convention center. So the, you know, the inside job thing is out there, and Greg Kelly intimated about it yesterday, and I think he believes that Curtis Sliwa the same. Many of my friends on social media who love this program, they feel the same way. I just don't go there. I did get a text just now from Russ Sullivan. He joined me very early yesterday. He listens live from Maryland every day, and he spent 23 years with the Secret Service, protecting people like Bush 43 and John Kerry. His brother Mike Sullivan, the Breezy Point legend, Tom Sullivan, running for assembly. And Russ sent me this. He said, Sid, good job holding ground on the non-conspiracy with the likelihood that the shooter's pre-shooting movements were first reported to local law enforcement at outer perimeter. Perhaps there was a communications failure between a local law enforcement agency and the U.S. Secret Service. Just a possibility. Perhaps local law enforcement lost track of the shooter. Still, none of these possibilities excuse not detecting Crook's movements on the roof. Counter sniper should have picked that up. Another great show, Russ. So, you know, I get it. How did he get there? And somebody saw him. But the idea this was some type of unbelievable plan, it really wasn't. I mean, the kid had a gun. He bought extra rounds that morning. He had a ladder. And he made it to the roof. Now, if you're going to tell me that the Secret Service guys inside that building knew this kid was climbing up there and did nothing about it, or they didn't know it beforehand but still did nothing about it because they hate Trump, I don't know. It is entirely possible for this kid to pull this off based on just an inept group of Secret Service who were either, you know, distracted or not paying attention. I don't know. It wouldn't be the first time that that a group like this just didn't do their job well without telling me that the planes didn't hit the buildings. It was a bunch of shadows. I'm not discounting or throwing out the possibility of an inside job, but I always leave that to the very, very end. When everything else fails, then I go to that. I never go to that right away. So we'll see. We'll talk to Tom Homan coming up in about 30 minutes. He's really great. And coming up next, one of the great legal minds on TV and radio today, Greg Jarrett, a monster win for Donald Trump yesterday. They threw out the documents case. The judge, Eileen Cannon, coming out and saying that hiring Merrick Garland, this punk, hiring Jack Smith was unconstitutional. And I couldn't agree more. We'll talk to the brilliant legal mind from Fox News, Greg Jarrett, when I come back live from Radio Row in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, day two of RNC 2024. Oh, I'm aware now that the riverbanks, they are dry. And to wait for a fly. For life, I've got to learn to live until the end. But first I must learn to swim all over rock. Yeah, 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 because I'm on the riverside, yeah.
Is Sid and Friends in the Morning.
77 WABC.
But what Judge Cannon is saying here is essentially, look, there's this weird anomaly in the Constitution. We have a process of which U.S. attorneys are nominated and they are then confirmed by the Senate. And yet the Attorney General can just go onto any street in D.C. and pick any person and make them a special counsel with greater authority than the U.S. attorney. And that's what she's trying to get at here, saying, where is the footprint for this in the Constitution? Where is the authority to create Jack Smith within the first three articles of the Constitution? So it's a huge win for Trump. This is a seismic decision because the immunity decision that was issued by the Supreme Court was the second of a 1-2 punch for Jack Smith. Previously, the court had reversed an obstruction charge that impacted Trump as well. And so those two cases sort of ripped the wings off his case. So we were all looking to see how Jack Smith would handle it in D.C. He is a very motivated and favorable judge, a Judge Chutkan. She has really been an ideal choice for Jack Smith. So the assumption was that Chutkan would do her level best to keep that case going even after these hits. Few people expected the Florida case to be the one that disassembled first.
Well, you can never go wrong with Blue Oyster Cult after Jonathan Turley, I can tell you that. Welcome back to Radio Row, folks. 6:55 locally in Milwaukee, 7:55 back in New York City. And my next guest is a guy that I love him. This guy's been on quite a bit since the Donald Trump trials. I believe he's the best legal mind on television, Fox News star Greg Jarrett. Greg, good morning, buddy. How are you?
Sid, good to be with you. Thanks very much. You in Milwaukee these days?
Yeah, I know. That is quite the dynamic. Sid Rosenberg, nobody more Brooklyn than Sid in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. But I am. I'm here. And what a day yesterday, Greg. I mean, you got Trump announces J.D. Vance. That's the VP. Donald Trump late last night walking out to a raucous crowd. I can't wait to see him tonight. And Thursday night, but the first piece of news yesterday was what you just heard John Turley, your colleague and friend, talking about, that Trump gets a huge win, and it does make sense. I mean, let's face it, Greg Jarrett, who the hell is Jack Smith?
Yeah, exactly, Sid. His appointment never made sense. It didn't seem right from the outset. I mean, a private citizen is magically empowered to prosecute a former president. It's, frankly, a pretty obvious violation of the Appointments Clause in the Constitution. That requires presidential appointment and Senate approval. And the framers gave Congress this pivotal role. Any officer of the United States has to be Senate confirmed. It's true that, you know, there have been other special counsels, but all of them at some point had been Senate confirmed for prior positions as officers of the United States, which is what a special counsel is. Most of them were U.S. attorneys named by presidents. Jack Smith never was. He was a private citizen. So this was a lawless act by Merrick Garland, and he did it deliberately. He picked Smith knowing that Smith would not be Senate approved because Smith has this horrible, notorious track record of shamelessly manipulating the law to bring politically driven prosecutions. So Garland said, I'm going to be really clever here. I'll circumvent the Constitution and I'll target Trump with these manufactured charges. And who better but Smith, who's the equivalent of a ruthless mob enforcer? And that's what happened. And they got caught. And the judge tossed the case.
Eileen Cannon, she's my hero yesterday. They are talking about appealing Cannon's decision, and we talk about appeals with Trump's team as well. How likely is it that an appeal will work in the Jack Smith deal?
You know, it'll go to the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals. Hard to handicap that. But even if it gets struck down there, then it goes to the U.S. Supreme Court. Clarence Thomas and a couple of other justices have expressed serious misgivings about the legitimacy of Jack Smith. So, but the, from a practical, immediate standpoint, this essentially ends any attempt by Smith to rush this case to trial before the election, and indeed before inauguration, should Trump prevail at the ballot box.
You know, Greg, the more I think about this, oh, you know, I do want to ask you one more thing about Jack Smith. My wife, who's an attorney, listening right now, she's brilliant and beautiful. She says, Danielle says, ask Greg Jarrett about the comparisons between Jack Smith's appointment and Kenneth Starr. Is there a comparison there?
Yeah, I think there is. I'm trying to remember, but I think Ken Starr, this is so long ago, I'm pretty darn sure, yeah. He was an independent counsel, and that statute, which was proper and lawful, and his appointment therefore was, that expired, I believe it was in 1999. And so there really is no comparison beyond the fact that this was authorized by Congress, Ken Starr, but Jack Smith wasn't.
Right, right.
And what happened in 99 is, well, the Department of Justice said, well, we love this special counsel, independent counsel stuff. And even though the statute authorizing is expired, we're going to create our own internal regulations, which I talked about in yesterday's column. And so they created, they manufactured this job out of thin air. And they got away with it for a while because so many of the appointed special counsels, you know, there's Robert Hur, David Weiss, John Durham, Robert Mueller, Patrick Fitzgerald, they were all former U.S. attorneys. Mueller was former FBI director. So they were all Senate approved. So that, you know, gave at least the image of propriety. But Smith doesn't fall in that category.
This is the great Greg Jarrett, Fox News legal mind, joining me. I'm in Milwaukee. Greg is back home. You know, the more I think about it, Biden has to use the courts at this point as a major emphasis, I think, for his campaign. I mean, think about it. You had this guy, George Marchand, Democrat, hates Trump. He gets the 34 felony convictions. You know, Alvin Bragg, Letitia James, Democrats in those positions, they get what they want. And here, between the Supreme Court ruling, which Biden has complained about that court, 6-3 in favor of Trump, and now Eileen Cannon down in Florida, who we knew would be familiar to Trump and the rest of these judges, you would think that just based upon the last couple of weeks with the immunity case and now this case, that Biden will use the courts, the judges, the legal system as a way to say, you see this? They're all in bed with Trump, his buddies.
Well, that assumes that Joe Biden's capable of articulating that point of view. And
well, listen, his vice president was an attorney general. She certainly could appreciate the law. Maybe she can do it.
Yeah, well, she flunked the bar exam. And, you know, I think what will be interesting is watch a smart guy like J.D. Vance, you know, run circles around Kamala Harris during a, you know, vice presidential debate. She'll probably haul out her usual line, unburdened by the past. Jeez, I'm getting nauseous just thinking about that. Any rate, you know, your point cuts both ways. I mean, it has been useful to Donald Trump that the lawfare against him seems fundamentally wrong to a great many Americans, that he is not a villain of illegality, but a victim of, you know, vicious, abusive prosecutorial vengeance by the Department of Justice and Joe Biden. Don't forget, it was Joe Biden who all but ordered that Trump be prosecuted by leaking to the New York Times his desire that the Department of Justice and others go after Donald Trump and indict him. You know, he didn't have to, you know, go over the DOJ and order Garland to do it. All he had to do was send the usual message through the media. And the handmaidens, you know, did it on cue. And you know, shortly thereafter, Garland appointed Jack Smith and, of course, Alvin Bragg. And the Georgia, you know, district attorney decided we're going to do the same and become heroes in our political party.
Yeah, Bonnie Willis. That also fell apart. So as we wrap this great conversation up, Craig, and I'm always very appreciative of your time, what's left? I mean, everybody kept telling me that the strongest of all these cases was the document case. That's gone. See ya. So Fannie Willis, that's going to be a point of contention, I think, for Democrats down in Georgia. The immunity basically says goodbye January 6th. So what's left?
Well, they all imploded under the weight of their own malignance. And, you know, that's the bottom line here. There really is nothing left except, of course, Judge Juan Merchan in New York will, you know, sentence at some point in time, you know, Donald Trump. But the, you know, look.
Well, hold on. But he is going to sentence Trump at some point in time. I think that's now been rescheduled for September the 18th. But there's still an appeal for that one, too. Yes.
Yeah, and in fact, I read a few days ago the very persuasive motion to dismiss based on the failure to consider immunity in the, you know, New York case. Remember, you read the indictment. Nearly every act contained therein occurred while he was president of the United States, and yet Juan Merchan refused to hold any hearings pre-trial about that, and then egregiously allowed just a plethora of evidence from witnesses about what were clearly presidential acts that are immune. That taints the entire case. So, you know, that's just one of the many reasons why that, in the end, will get overturned.
So there's nothing left. Yeah, I remember.
Nothing left.
Yeah, no. I mean, I remember when all this started. Really smart guys, Craig. One of my best buddies, maybe my best of 47 years. He went to Poly Prep together, Joseph Tacopina, who represented Trump on not one but two cases. Arthur Idala, who just got that unbelievable legal win in the appeal for Harvey Weinstein. Judge Napolitano, all of them were saying, hey, there's too much here. There's no way he escapes unscathed with all these indictments. And they were all wrong, bottom line.
Well, I hate to say it, but I was right. Every time he got indicted, I went through the indictments and I explained how this will fail. And all of them have indeed failed. Because when you mangle evidence and contort the law and misrepresent facts, it's pretty obvious to a trained lawyer reading an indictment. And you know, is glaring in all of them. They were all fundamentally, you know, a wrongful abuse of the law. And in the end, you know, as I've always believed, justice prevails.
I believe that, too, except for O.J. Simpson.
Yeah. There's always an exception, isn't there? I was there for the 9 months, and, boy, I've never seen such overwhelming evidence of guilt. But the jurors got it wrong.
Yeah, I mean, according to the legal scholars like Alan Dershowitz, the jurors got it right because Johnny Cochran, God rest his soul, in his ultimate genius, made what was supposed to be a double murder trial into whether or not some cop was a racist. And he succeeded.
Yeah, you know, the Dersh knows better. And Johnny Cochran, God bless him, he became a friend of mine. Was a fine, fine lawyer, and he snookered the jury. But the fault lays with the prosecutors, Marsha Clark and Chris Darden.
Yeah.
They bungled that case the moment it began, and, you know, it's a sad chapter.
Now, the prosecution did a terrible job, but and I said this right to Dershowitz. I said, I don't want to take it away from you and Johnny and that whole dream team. But if, in fact, that jury were 12 white people and not 12 black people, the outcome would have been different. Agree?
Yes. You know, it was a race case. and it was a cop case. And during that period of time in Los Angeles, where I grew up and knew it quite well, the moment that the DA sent the case downtown, you know, I said, this is lost. What a colossal mistake by the DA. If they'd tried the case in the venue where the crime occurred, he would have been convicted criminally. But, you know, justice in the end sort of did prevail. He led a miserable life and ended up behind prison for a very long time.
True.
And died in shame. True. So there is that kind of justice.
Yeah, right. Well said. Hey, Greg, you know, I think you really are terrific. And every time you're on, you're great. So thank you so much for hopping on today. We'll talk again very soon, buddy. God bless you.
Enjoy Milwaukee, Sid.
I will. That's the brilliant legal mind from Fox News. Now a Sid fave, my buddy Greg Jarrett. Still lots more to do. Local congresswoman out of Staten Island and Brooklyn, Nicole Malliotakis. She's walking around Radio Row as we speak. We'll get her view on whether or not J.D. Vance is good for Trump in New York. We're also going to talk to the congressman right here in Wisconsin about the likelihood or possibility that Donald Trump will win Wisconsin. And then coming up next at the Nome with the News, one of the great interviews you'll ever hear, Tom Homan. Homan, Wisconsin Congress, Brooklyn and Staten Island Congress. One surprise as well. Still a come halfway through day two of RNC 2024, live from Milwaukee.
Live from the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, here's Sid Rosenberg.
You know, I did so many years in sports, WFAN in New York, the biggest and best of all three stations in Miami. I covered nearly 20 Super Bowls, covered Pro Bowls in Honolulu. And, you know, you'd go through the business of Radio Row like I'm doing now, and it was wild because, you know, Dan Marino would walk in, Joe Namath, you know, Joe Montana, all these guys. They would party all night long, and then Radio Row the next morning would be dead. Kind of the same thing here. I mean, you have to swap out, you know, Ben Carson and J.D. Vance for Namath and Marino. But it's the same thing. You know, people are out late at night at the convention. They saw Trump last night. They probably went out for drinks afterwards. So a bit quieter in the morning, which is just how I like it, mind you. So my next guest, I love this guy. I am on record. I told Trump and a million other people he's one of my favorite people. He is a former police officer, government official, and during Trump's administration, he was the acting director of the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement. He's a tough, tough guy, but a nice guy as well. My friend Tom Homan. Tom, good morning, buddy. How are you?
Good morning. Happy to be here in Milwaukee.
Are you really?
Oh, yeah. I'll be on stage tomorrow.
Oh, good. I can't wait to see you speak. I want to tell you, you know, you were honored a couple of months ago at the Metropolitan Club dinner. You and who else was that? Gordon Chang, Greg Kelly, Alina Haba. Now, I was honored the year before. Greg Kelly got the award this year that I received the year before, Tom. But you spoke and you talked specifically about immigration. And you got very graphic about how five-year-old boys are being raped and murdered. Eight-year-old girls are being raped and murdered. There was not a dry eye in the house that night. You were that good.
Well, you know, that's why I'm so passionate. People, you know, always, a pilot in American, I took an American flight over here, and the pilot actually stopped me in the galleyway and said, hey, I love you on TV. Because I just wondered, you always seem to be pissed off. Not pissed why him. I said, if you wore my shoes for 34 years and talked to the children that were raped, talked to the women that were raped, you know, carried dead bodies off the border, you know, we got 148,000 dead Americans, we got record numbers of terrorists across that come across the border. I said, and this is done on purpose. We had the most secure border of my lifetime under Trump, and these guys came in unsecured on purpose, which means more children are being raped, more women and children are dying, more terrorists are getting in the country. So, yeah, I'm pissed. And I've seen a lot of tragedies in my 34 years, and Donald Trump had it locked down. We were saving lives every day and saving all this terrible, terrible tragedy. And this administration opened it back up. Now we have record number of everything. Yeah, so it's I want to share those visions with people to understand, look, illegal immigration is not a victimless crime. People are dying every day on that border. And we had it locked down. So, yeah, I tell those stories. They're true, every one of them. I want people to understand, walk in my shoes for 34 years, and you'd understand my emotion and my passion.
I tell you, it's important stuff. It's tough to listen to, Tom, but it's important stuff. And, you know, it goes back to Biden, you know, the people that he picks for his administration. I mean, look at Merrick Garland, for example, exposed again, unconstitutional choice of Jack Smith. You and I are going to get to the lady from the Secret Service coming up here shortly. But Mayorkas, I mean, the job, I know that Kamala Harris is the border czar, blah, blah, blah. But there is no way any logical person can convince me, forget about impeachment, Tom Homan. Mayorkas should be in prison. How about that?
Yeah, you know, his actions are, you know, are treasonous. He is not a dumb man. When he was deputy secretary under Jay Johnson, he had a whole different perspective. He actually went to New York City with me during an ICE operation to arrest criminals in Brooklyn. He went side by side with me under Jay Johnson as secretary. So he understands the importance of protecting our streets and our neighborhoods, but he is completely at a 180. I call for his impeachment 3 months into the administration. That man needs to be held accountable. Because of him, we got 148,000 dead Americans from fentanyl. We have over 2,200 illegal aliens that died crossing that open border. We have 381 no inspected terrorists across that border. What he's done is treasonous. He needs to be held accountable.
Couldn't agree more. Tom Homan joining us live from Milwaukee. So I was watching the coverage of President Trump at that rally. I saw him get shot. And then I stuck, of course, with Fox News. I'm a Fox News loyalist. Most of you guys are my friends throughout the night. And the coverage was great. And they went to you pretty early on, Tom Homan. You were on maybe second or third. And you were giving Kimberly Cheadle all the criticism that she deserves. Now, I'll tell you this, okay, a few of my guests and a bunch of my listeners who contacted me, they're talking about an inside job. Look, I draw the line there. I don't think it was an inside job. I think it was perfectly possible that these specific service people were asleep at the wheel, didn't do the right thing. But I'm always hesitant, Tom Homan, to go to quote-unquote inside job. Am I being naive, or what do you think?
No, I'm with you. I've said the same thing. Let's prove it to me it's an inside job. Until then, look, I'm with President Trump an awful lot. In his security detail, the men and women who got on stage with him, I know them by first name basis. And these guys, think about this. I've been on that stage many times with Trump behind that podium. Within 2 seconds of that shot, you had grown men go up the stairs, go across that stage, and put President Trump down and covered him up. They put themselves in harm's way. They didn't know there wasn't more bullets coming, but they weren't putting themselves in harm's way. And then I heard some media saying, well, they had him on stage too long. He should have took him off the stage quicker. Well, I've been there. The first thing a president's trained to do is get behind the podium, which has a lot of safety features, of course. They get on top of him. I can tell you, I'm a pretty big boy, but if I get tackled by four men, I probably don't have the wind knocked out of me. So first of all, was the president ready to get up? Second of all, they all got earpieces in. I'm sure the incident commander is telling them, stay down, stay covered. We're scanning for any other shooters. And then they get the green light. And we don't know if the escape vehicles were put in place in time. You know, that may take a couple minutes. But I want to say the men and women that got on that stage are American heroes. That's a rare bunch of people that's willing to take a bullet for somebody else. And they did that. So hats off to those guys. Now, the rifle on the roof, someone needs to be held. Someone dropped the ball. And I think it's leadership, and I think they need to be held accountable. We'll find out starting today. Congress is doing a deep dive in it. I'll tell you what I think. It needs to be an independent investigation outside of the FBI and outside the Secret Service. It needs to be done independently by members of Congress to get to the bottom of this.
I agree about the folks on the ground. They did act quickly, and they were terrific. I've heard those same criticisms, but most of the criticism coming from what you just talked about, which is, how is it possible that a kid can climb on the roof when the Secret Service were inside that building? Somebody was on my show this morning and they said, what a complex operation. I said, complex? The kid had a gun. He bought 50 rounds. He had a ladder. Now, again, I can't explain why he got up on the roof. It may speak to the ineptitude or the lack of concentration from the guys in the building, but you know better than me, Tom. To me, that wasn't a very complex thing this guy put together. It was actually pretty easy.
Right. You know, Mark Green, chairman of Homeland Oversight, called me, and I'm friends with him, and he asked me, what questions would you ask? And one of the questions I told him you'd ask is about the communications. Now, we know a law enforcement officer first engaged him. Does those local and state law enforcement do they have direct communications with Secret Service? They should. If they could, he should have got on his radio right then and says, man on the roof. That ends it right there. Man on the roof. Take Trump off the stage for a few minutes and get taken care of.
Well, let me just stop you for a second, because while you were on TV on Fox News, supposedly BBC was talking to a guy who I also saw on Fox News with a multicolored jacket holding a beer that said that he did alert both Secret Service and police that he saw somebody crawling on the roof, and they decided to do nothing about it.
If that's true, that's a fail, and someone needs to be held accountable. But the director of Secret Service, who failed to come on TV for the first 40 hours and didn't say anything because she was hiding, she needs to be held accountable. She should lose her job just because of the failure of her to get to the American people and tell them what the hell happened to our president. So that she failed. You know, operationally, I think she failed. But she also failed in her role as a director of Secret Service to get on TV and let the American people rest assured that our president is safe. She has yet to do that. I've seen she being interviewed a few times, but she has yet to say, I guarantee the safety of this president, my men and women will do everything they can to keep protecting this guy. Get out there and talk to the American people. That is your job, to make us feel a little bit better about the safety of this president.
I agree, but she hasn't, and I don't expect Joe Biden to fire her, Tom, and you know better than me, but I haven't seen Joe Biden fire anybody. We just talked about Mayorkas. We've talked about Merrick Garland. I mean, these are bad people. They may have been good people years ago when you knew them, but at this point, they're bad people, and they're making some awful decisions, and they're all still working. You know, I had this discussion with my wife a couple of days ago, and it was, do you think things will change now? And I said, no, I don't think that President Trump will stop doing outdoor rallies, that he won't be standing out there in front of thousands and thousands of people, because I think he trusts the process and he loves it. He loves talking to large crowds. So I don't think what happened Saturday will change, for the most part, what Trump has been doing. But you know Donald better than I do. What do you think?
Well, look, I think there's going to be change. I think the American people who believe this crap the last 3.5 years that Donald Trump's a coward, he only cares about himself. This man got shot. Rather than, you know, going straight to the car after they did get him on his feet, what did he do? He moved the Secret Service agent aside, put his fist in there, and told people to fight. He showed them he's a warrior. He's a brave man. He's a man's man. And he did that for the American people. He did that for no other reason, letting them know I'm good and I'm going to continue to fight. They're not going to stop me. They shouldn't stop you. That is a warrior. That's the kind of a president we haven't had in a very long time. And as far as the Biden campaign, they're going to do everything they can to stop Donald Trump. They don't want him to be the next president of the United States. And I'm with you. There should have been a lot of people fired. First one, Mayorkas, he should have been fired for 6 months because of what he's done to this nation. But I can tell you this. President Trump's one badass president. President Trump will be our president in January, and he's going to make this country safe again. We're going to lock down the border in 90 days, and we'll give Americans a peace of mind. President Trump is a people's president. He proved that. He's the people's president, and we need him back.
In the final couple of seconds or minutes here, Tom, you said we'll lock down the border in 90 days. You know, I'm very good friends with David Friedman. David Friedman served as Trump's ambassador to Israel. He's in Israel as we speak, by the way, awaiting the birth of his granddaughter. And he did a terrific job, him along with Trump and Trump's son-in-law, the Abraham Accords. They kept Israel safe. And you did, too, with the border. Now, Friedman has said to me on this show, if Trump wins and he wants me back, I'm going to take that job. So I'll ask you the same question. When Trump wins, if he offers you to once again be in charge of immigration and lock down that border, I'm assuming from what you just said, you would go right back to that same position, yes?
In a heartbeat. And I told the president, I'm so pissed off, I'll come back for free.
You mean it, man. You are terrific, Tom Holman, a great American. Hopefully I'll see you tonight, certainly before Thursday, here in Milwaukee. Thank you so much. I'll talk to you soon, buddy. Thanks.
All right. Thank you, sir.
All right. There he is, Tom Holman, here on Sid and Friends in the Morning. And When he says he's pissed, he's not kidding. He's pissed. And he went on to tell some really horrific stories in graphic detail that night, many of which I'll never forget, about what's going on at the border. The real stories, you know, the ones that Biden, Harris, Mayorkas, they ain't never going to tell you. Let's take a short break. Big Lou Ruffino, once again, live here on Radio Row in Milwaukee. Been a tremendous show already, tremendous. And we still have two or three more great guests to come. Sid Rosenberg on a Tuesday, day two in Milwaukee.
Well, he's just an excitable boy.
Is Sid and Friends in the Morning.
Entertaining and informative.
Boy, you're my best friend.
77 WABC.
Da, da, da. Happy birthday to the drummer of this great band, The Police. According to Lou Ruffino, Stuart Copeland turned 72 today. And you remember, Lou, you remember one of the great teen angst movies of all time, Last American Virgin, which ended with the song Just Once, by the way, Quincy Jones. But when the kid tried to cut off the fat girl's bra with a pair of scissors, this Police song was playing in the background. You remember that?
No.
You don't know.
Okay. But I know the movie.
Yeah, was it? I loved all those movies.
Is that the movie where the French girl leaves the kid at the end?
No, no, no.
Yeah, it is,
that's
isn't
the
it?
Movie where you got the young kid who falls in love. Man, I forgot her name. Really pretty young girl at
yeah,
the time.
Yeah, I'm thinking of the
he
same
He falls
movie.
In love with her, but she loves this guy. I think his real name was Steve Astin. Good-looking blonde guy.
Right, but then he cheated on her.
No, he got her pregnant, and
the
geeky kid sold all of his stereo equipment. Back then we had stereo equipment.
And he helped her.
And he paid for the abortion, and he thinks she's going to become his boyfriend, and he shows up at a party at the end of the movie, and he walks in, and she's kissing the guy.
Yeah, that's
that
right.
Ran out of him.
Okay, I got the right movie.
Just
though.
Once.
It's
yeah.
a sad
yeah.
ending. Yeah, it's rough. Terrible. He drives away by himself.
Yes. You know, I very rarely read texts on the program, especially if they say nice things about me, because that's not my nature. You know that, Lewis. You know that.
Really?
Yeah. But Jack Manzo, my friend out of New Jersey, who was a guy that introduced me to Jack Chiarelli, who's going to be the next governor of New Jersey. You can count on that. He just sent me this. He says, man, I'm not sure if people realize this, or even if you realize it, but you're becoming bigger, better, more popular, and more important than Imus and Stern. Great job, Sid. So, I wasn't going to read it because...
No, not at all, because that's not in your nature.
Right, that's not what I'm doing.
Right, you were going to let that go by the wayside, I can
right,
tell.
Jack Manzo.
Gee, you know, you're getting bigger than all these other radio legends, but keep that to yourself. thanks, but don't talk about it. Just message me about
it. I'm going to talk to the congressman here in Milwaukee, Brian Stile. This is a home game for him, the convention right here in Milwaukee coming up next. But, you know, I'm out of town, obviously, and my son Gabriel, his team had a game last night. You know, it's I'm one of these coaches, you can get me out of town, but I never leave. I actually FaceTimed my assistant coach, Ryan Moran, before the game last night, and I go, put the kids on the phone, and some of my players, Daniel, Coleman, I FaceTimed them before the game, and I said, I'm in Milwaukee, but my heart's with you guys, so go out there tonight and play a good game and get me the win. So it turns out that Gabriel's team held off a late furious rally, won the game by two, and now they are 3-1. They've got another game coming up, which I'll miss again. I'm upset about that one on Wednesday night, tomorrow night, but I'll be back in the next game on Monday night. So congratulations to Ryan Moran and the Blue Bears. We are now at 3-1. We're going to take a short break. We'll get a traffic update from Lori Blanchard. And when we come back, once again, we're live in Milwaukee. Milwaukee Congressman, he's a great guy. You're going to love him. Brian Steil on what the week will be like in Milwaukee this week and whether or not Donald Trump has a real shot at winning Wisconsin. Don't forget, he wins Wisconsin, Michigan, game over. Will Trump win Wisconsin? You'll find out from Congressman Brian Steil coming up next.
Live from the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, here's Sid Rosenberg.
All right, back here live on Radio Row, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, the home of RNC 2024. A couple days from now, my friend President Donald Trump will be officially nominated for President of the United States for our party. And at this point, I have very little doubt that he will be elected as the 47th President of the United States come November. But I want to win Wisconsin. So I got to speak to the guy in Wisconsin who's going to get that done. And, you know, I did sports most of my career. So the people that I thought mattered in Wisconsin, for example, were Brett Favre, Aaron Rodgers, Robin Yount, Paul Molitor, Sidney Moncrief, Marcus Johnson, but I couldn't get them. So I'm going to talk to the congressman out of Milwaukee instead, Brian Steil. Brian, good morning, pal. How are you?
Doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you. Are you a fan of all those players? Are you a big sports fan here in Milwaukee?
Yeah, big time. And now we got Jordan Love, and I think the Packers are going to be pretty good. We keep sending our old quarterbacks to New York, and we keep bringing in new quality quarterbacks, so I think it's great.
That's true. Brett Favre, Aaron Rodgers, and this kid Jordan Love is really good.
He's the real deal. I think we could have a really good team this year.
I think you can, too. So I had dinner a couple nights ago with a good friend of mine and yours, another member of Congress, out of Nassau County, Long Island, Anthony D'Esposito. We went to the Capitol Grill here in Milwaukee, and he brought your name up. And he said, you know, we're working together on this committee to stop illegals from voting. Yes, you heard me right, folks. We're actually debating this, whether illegals should be allowed to vote or not in these cities. And you head that committee here in Wisconsin. Is that right?
Yeah, so I head the Committee on House Administration in Washington, D.C. with Anthony D'Esposito. And you're exactly right as it comes to the fight we're having about whether or not U.S. elections should be for U.S. citizens. I'm of the view U.S. elections should be for U.S. citizens only. It's amazing that the Democrats believe that non-citizens should be participating and voting in our elections.
Well, you know why?
Yeah, they want to win.
They want to win.
Democrats would rather be in power than be right. Republicans would rather be right than be in power sometimes. And if we fix that part on the Republican side that we can unite and win, we can override the Democrats, but the Democrats just want power.
Exactly right, Brian Steil here in Wisconsin. So I know that your area is huge. I don't know exactly. I guess you start in greater Milwaukee all the way down to the southern part of the state. Is that right?
Yeah, so it's the southern parts of Milwaukee County, about seven suburbs of Milwaukee through Racine and Kenosha, heading down towards Chicago and then over through into Janesville and Beloit about midway through the state.
So basically, if we win your districts, we can win Wisconsin.
This state is narrowly divided, and who wins Wisconsin, I think, will win the White House. President Trump came to Racine, Wisconsin about 3 weeks ago, and I got to introduce him. This is the swing area of the state. I mean, this is the area of the state that can go left, it can go right. And if we're getting our message out in the southeast corner of Wisconsin, we can be successful.
Well, what do you think? Do you think you're getting the message out? Is there any way, is there any barometer, any way you can tell whether it's working or not?
Well, you can look at the polling, but at the end of the day, Wisconsin is always close. I mean, since 2010, a wild election in Wisconsin means somebody wins by 30,000 votes across the entire state. And so this is a moment in time. Not only do you need to bring people into the Republican tent, we're going to have a huge effort to make sure that we're turning out the vote, that no conservative voice is left unheard in this November election. And that's where using all the tools in the toolkit, in particular in Wisconsin, banking the vote, voting early, swamping the vote is going to be essential, because the Democratic turnout in the state is really high. As conservatives, we're going to have to match it.
How, for you, how great is it to have this convention in your city?
Oh, this is awesome. Wisconsin in the summer is the best place you want to be.
We're no, it's not. Will you stop it, Brian? Stop it. Wisconsin is not the best place to be any time of year. It's a nice city. Don't get me wrong. I like it here. But you're telling me you'd rather be in here than Honolulu?
Oh, this is
Miami?
In July, I'll take a day on Lake Michigan any day.
It is nice.
We can have a debate in the middle of February. I could respect your opinion in February.
Right.
Although I like the snow. But that said, I think a lot of people from across the country who maybe haven't spent time in Milwaukee are getting an opportunity for the first time to see how great Wisconsin is. And to have the national attention here in an election that's this essential, where people need to see the policy contrast between what President Trump did for the country and what President Biden has done to the country, this is really important to make sure we're getting the conservative vote out come November.
Congressman Brian Steil. So you said you were with Trump like 3 weeks ago in Racine, right? We all saw what happened on Saturday night. You were just with the president a couple of weeks ago. Where were you on Saturday when the shots rang out? And how'd you feel?
I was in my house in Wisconsin. I was actually doing laundry, getting ready to come to Milwaukee, and I had the TV on.
How far do you live from Milwaukee?
It's about an hour.
Okay.
About an hour. And I was just getting stuff ready at the house, and I had the TV on. I kind of looked up and said, what the heck just happened? And like I think a lot of Americans realize the significance of that. And I think maybe for myself, but I hope for the whole country, is a moment of sobriety of recognizing how challenging it is and the risk that President Trump is taking to run for president, and a real opportunity for us to focus in on what makes our country so great and the true policies that we need to put in place to get our country back on track, and we can do that if we elect President Trump.
So what do you expect to see on Thursday night, the big speech here in Milwaukee?
I hope that it's focused in on a contrast to policies. It's so rare that you really get two incumbents running against each other where you can directly compare and contrast their policies. Just take the border. President Trump put in a series of policies that secured the U.S.-Mexico border. President Biden comes in, directly unwinds President Trump's policies, right? He removes stay in Mexico. He ends border wall construction. He allows an abuse of the parole system. You can't have a better contrast on the difference these policies make. President Trump comes back into office day one. He's going to reinstate stay in Mexico. He's going to end abuse of the parole system. He's going to end catch and release. He's going to restart border wall construction. And these policies have real world consequences in communities across the country. New York City, other big cities get a lot of attention on what was happening with the migrant crisis. Less attention, a city of Whitewater, a city of 15,000 people, about halfway between here and my home in the state of Wisconsin, has seen over 1,000 migrants arrive in a city of 15,000.
That's a lot.
And so as a percentage, it's bigger than what's going on in New York.
That's a lot.
Not a total number of people bigger, but a percentage bigger. And the impact that the border crisis is having in smaller communities in Wisconsin and across the country, I think is an underreported fact, but I think it will show up when people go to vote in November.
So when you look at the Democrat Party, okay, and you talk about some of the policies that are absolutely killing us, and there are more, obviously, now they're looking to unite, bring everybody together after what happened to President Trump a couple of days ago. But then again, it didn't take the lefty media very long. It took the very next day for people like Stephanopoulos and Raddatz and the girl, Margaret Brennan, on Face the Nation, the lady. It didn't take long for them to go at Donald Trump. It took them one day. I know you're not surprised, but on one hand, they ask for unity. On the other hand, especially the media, they do nothing to ensure that's the case.
Well, the rhetoric has been out of hand for far too long. And again, my hope, and I don't want to sound Pollyannish, but my hope is that we come back and focus a little bit more on the policy here. And if we do that, that's a good debate and discussion to have, like we were saying on non-citizens voting. It's hard to believe that people believe non-citizens should vote. I'm of the belief that it should be for U.S. citizens
only. Of course.
But let's talk about those policies, because so many people need to understand how radical the policies are that are being put out by the left, so that we're actually focused in on what really matters at election time.
One more, Congressman Brian Stile. The left had this grand plan, right, Brian? They were going to take down Trump. Years ago, it was the Russia collusion nonsense, all the impeachments. Then you had all these indictments. And what did we find out yesterday? The document case? See ya. Bye-bye. So all these grand indictments, all these grand cases that were supposed to put our friend Donald Trump in prison for a long time, they're all going away. Just like the Democrat hope to win the election, it's going away.
All the attacks that the left tries to throw at Donald Trump at the end of the day are not going to be successful, because their policies are terrible and are driving the country in the wrong direction. The Democrats want to talk about anything other than the impact that their policies have on Americans. They don't want to talk about how the reckless spending that they unleashed in Washington, D.C. drove inflation higher, making it harder and harder for families to afford the things that they need. They don't want to talk about the border. They don't want to talk about their weak foreign policy position, led and signified by a botched evacuation of Afghanistan, and that how that unleashed tyrants. Tyrants are tempted when they sense weakness. They sense weakness in this administration's foreign policy. So what you see is Democrats not wanting to talk about policy, trying to attack President Trump in other means. If we bring this conversation back to the table to talk about how Democratic policies are moving us in the wrong direction, that's when we will be successful in November.
You are a very impressive young man. I say young, I'm not sure how old you are, but I'm old. And it's great to meet you. And Wisconsin's very lucky to have you. And I do believe that Donald Trump will win Wisconsin with people like you out there fighting for him. So thank you for sitting down this morning, and best of luck to you.
Thanks for having me in. Welcome to Wisconsin.
Thank you. That's my friend Brian Stile, congressman here in Wisconsin, and he is fighting the good fight every day. Take a short break. More from Radio Row right after these words.
Sit in Friends in the Morning.
Friends, how many of us have them? Friends. 77
WABC. Well, I tried to make it Sunday, but I got so damn depressed. But I set my sights on Monday, and I got myself undressed. I ain't ready for the altar, but I do agree there's times when a woman sure can be a friend of mine.
Say it every time, Louis. Somewhere, our dear friend and colleague running the board right now, performer Esiason Eddie Scazzeri, is smiling. He loves this song. So does my kids. Ava and Gabriel, Sister Golden Hair, Surprise by America. It is locally 8:14 a.m. I know 9:14 back in New York, wrapping up the fourth and final hour, day two of 5 days of coverage from the RNC. And straight ahead, I don't know, about 10 feet in front of me, dressed in a beautiful white pantsuit and some very fancy gold pin that, I don't know, gave it to her, maybe Trump, I don't know, is our friend from Staten Island and Brooklyn, Nicole Maliotakis, and she's going to join me momentarily. You know, tonight we're going to the convention, and we're going to go Thursday night as well. I'm not going to go tomorrow. I have no idea who's speaking. But again, after Corey Lewandowski sat with me yesterday and said, Sid, if you're looking for big names, exciting names, it ain't going to be this. They'll do that in Chicago next month. Even though a lot of the celebrities are angry with Biden, people like Clooney, they want him to step down, there are still a ton of celebrities that are standing by Biden. Trump doesn't want that. Trump wants this week to be about the everyday Americans, the folks that have struggled mightily the last 3+ years, and the folks that need Donald Trump back as badly as anyone. That's the theme. It's not about 50 Cent or Mike Tyson or even, you know, our friend Dana White, who's going to speak right before Trump. It's less about celebrity with Donald Trump. It's more about America. Yes, I just mentioned to her, Nicole Maliotakis. She's going to join me right after this. We'll take a short break. Talk to Nicole live on Radio Row, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, the site of RNC 2024.
I don't mind saying I just can't make it. Sister of golden hair surprise, and I just can't live without you. Can't you see it in my eyes? Now I've been one poor correspondent, and I've been too hard to find. But it doesn't mean you ain't been on the mind. Will you hate me?
Live from the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, here's Sid Rosenberg.
They say misery loves company. We could start a company.
Day two back here on Radio Row, and sitting to my left is a dear friend of mine, not just a terrific politician, great congresswoman out of Staten Island and Brooklyn, but a friend, a real friend, over the last couple of years, Nicole Maliotakis. Great suit, by the way.
Thank you very much.
What is that pin you're wearing? What is that?
This is my congressional pin.
How'd you get that?
I worked hard. I raised a lot of money and worked hard.
So when you actually win and you become a member of Congress, it's kind of like La Cosa Nostra, right? They cut your finger, they give you a pin. It's a whole thing, right?
Yeah, well, this pin is one of the benefits of being in Congress because I can actually get around this building.
Is that right?
A little bit easier, yes.
But you still need a credential.
Need a credential, but, you know.
Don't you think, and I understand our friend the president just got shot a couple of days ago.
Yeah.
But don't you think security here is a bit much?
No, look, I think it's warranted, especially what happened the other day. It's a lot of walking. We're getting a lot of steps in because the perimeters are huge. But, look, I think it's obviously in this day and age, it's just sadly necessary.
Yeah, I think it's a bit much. I think it's necessary. This is a bit much.
Well, you're a tough guy, though. You could defend yourself.
I get very angry.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was angry yesterday. I had to walk out of here. and had to walk a pretty good distance over the Milwaukee River Bridge to find a spot where I can get an Uber to get back to my hotel. I'm staying all the way out west. And you're not going to believe this, Nicole. I'm standing on the corner of State and Water Street here in Milwaukee, and across the street in this park is a massive, I mean massive, pro-Palestinian rally. One guy actually made the mistake of saying good morning to me. He was wearing a Free Palestine shirt. He said, good morning. Couldn't have been nicer. I said, don't you talk to me. He said, excuse me? I said, walk across the street, you Jew hater. And I didn't threaten him. He still called Secret Service on me. But I couldn't believe, right here, 5 minutes away, it's not just in New York, huh?
Well, I'm sure they're from New York. They probably came all the way over here just to annoy you.
Well, we do a terrible job with that in New York, too. I mean, terrible job, no?
Well, look, I think it's unfortunate that young people have just... This is part of the problem with our education system. They're not just pro-Palestinian. They're actually pro-Hamas. They're actually rooting for Hamas.
Right, that's right.
And there's a difference there. But Hamas is... I mean, they were happy when Hamas endorsed them.
I know.
Right? And so did Iran. The Iranian Ayatollah endorses them, and they're excited about it. It's unbelievable.
And I'll tell you this. Because it was the first day of Passover, Monday, and I went to Columbia, and I took Anthony D'Esposito, Bruce Blakeman, Mike Lawler, and the actor Michael Rappaport. You came 2 days later with Mike Johnson to Columbia. And I said this to Bill O'Reilly. There's no school right now. It's kind of quiet. The last bad incident was the train and outside of Nova. If you don't think when school starts in September, they're going to be right back at Columbia, NYU. You're somewhere between naive and stupid and closer to the latter. They're going to come back.
And you know what? I'm really happy my House Ways and Means Committee last week passed out my legislation that would fine these schools if they're violating these students' civil rights, if they're not protecting these students from anti-Semitism, and they have a complaint filed of them and they're found guilty, then they will be fined. And I think it's really important that we send that message. We're going to hold these institutions accountable. In fact, the day we announced that we were going to be taking up this bill in my committee was the day that three of those administrators were suspended indefinitely. And I think it was in response to seeing our bill coming out, knowing that we were going to be passing it out of the Ways and Means Committee. And I hope we take it up on the floor soon. I'm really happy to work with Elise Stefanik on that, and it's a good bill, and we need to get it done.
It's a great bill. I know you guys were also working on defunding these universities, public and or private. Where's that?
Yeah, well, we have a couple of pieces of legislation that we're working on. One of my other bills would actually strip visas from foreign students who participate in these anti-Semitic activities. And, you know, that one's moving along. I think the speaker is interested in doing something along those lines, whether it's going to be my bill or somebody else's. We'll see the details. But I think that's really important. And then, of course, stripping 501c3 status has been on a discussion. We'll see what happens there. But stripping federal funding is one bill that I've also introduced. Gives a mechanism for the Secretary of Education to move forward and strip them if they don't hold these professors and student organizations accountable.
Professors are a big problem, too, the alumni, too, which is professors. You know, I'm a New York guy, you're a New York girl, and I'm a dick. I understand that. So, like, Mike Johnson shows up yesterday. He's the House Speaker. He's a speaker for everybody. But for some reason, I think he only cares about me and us in New York. And I've been with Mike when he's been with you guys, our New York delegation, if you will. And it's probably just me. I just admitted it. But I feel like for some reason, he really likes us, like you guys. He really likes you guys. Am I getting carried away or is that true?
No, look, I think he's been a good speaker for the members of New York. He is somebody who, you know, listens to our concerns. He's from Louisiana, so we had to, like, kind of, you know, work on him a little bit. But I think that he loves Anthony D'Esposito, though.
He does.
He loves Anthony. He loves to do an impression of Anthony D'Esposito and his tough guy cop mentality, which is a lot of fun. But look, I think he's been to New York quite a bit supporting the members who are the more vulnerable members like Mike Lawler and Anthony D'Esposito and others. And we give him a lot of credit for that because he's just, you know, he's new to the job. And he's got a lot of places to go around the country to meet people and do things. And he's spending quite a bit of time in New York helping our members to make sure, because he understands that New York is the majority. He understands that these seats that we flipped, mine included, which we flipped in 2020, need to be held if we are going to keep the majority hopefully expand the majority in November.
Well, how do you feel about that? You got Mark Molinaro. He's another one up in Hudson County. You mentioned Lawler. I think Lawler wins. I think that Esposito is going to kill Laura Gillum. But as a whole, how do you feel about retaining seats and adding seats? Something you've been right about for years.
Well, I feel good about it. Obviously, when we won that lawsuit, when they tried to gerrymander me into Park Slope, when we won that lawsuit and they threw the entire map out and we got a fair, independently drawn map by a special master, that made all the difference in the world. We know in New York that if we have competitive districts drawn, that Republicans will win, especially right now because the Democrats have just destroyed New York with their wanting to spend billions of our dollars to house illegal immigrants who are committing crimes. Remember, people are arrested for committing a crime and they're going back to the hotel that you and I are paying for.
Unbelievable.
It's ridiculous.
It is.
And they're getting more in services than our poor seniors who are living on Social Security. And that's something that story needs to get out there and people need to hear it because it's unconscionable what they're doing to the taxpayers in New York. And of course, my nemesis over there in Brooklyn, Justin Brannon, just voted to increase the property taxes again, increasing the property tax levy once more as the finance chairman of the New York City Council. So people who are upset should express their views to Justin Brannon for increasing our property taxes because he says one thing and then he goes in the council chamber and votes a different way.
Is he still considering running against you at some point?
Well, no. He didn't have
the balls.
I'm glad you said it. He didn't have it to run. So, whatever. I think the people of this district would reject somebody like Justin Brannon.
So do I. Yes.
Overwhelmingly, which is why he didn't run. I mean, he voted to defund the police.
Right.
He voted, he supports, he doesn't want to change the sanctuary status of New York. He doesn't want to deport people who are committing crimes. Instead, he increased the property taxes once again to help give more billions of dollars to house these criminals in these shelters. It's unbelievable.
I know you got another interview to do, but you have to stick around because I want to get your opinion on J.D. Vance and Donald Trump, but I got to get the opening bell report. So I'm going back to Nome in New York City. He'll get us the opening bell. Then a few more minutes with my friend Congresswoman Nicole Malliotakis. Her thoughts on J.D. Vance and Donald Trump. Noam, take it away.
Sid and Friends in the Morning.
77 WABC.
Oh, this is a great song. I used to love Harry Chapin.
A child arrived,
and I think you told me early today that today is a significant day for Harry Chapin. Is it his birthday? Did he die today, Lou? Which one was it?
He passed away today.
He died today.
1981.
That horrible car accident.
Yes, there was a car accident. Exactly.
Yeah. I think it was over 40 years ago already.
81?
Oh, my God, really? That means he's dead for 43 years, Harry Chapin. My God. Anyway, thank you for that. Lou, back here on Radio Row, Nicole Malliotakis is with me. So, Trump loves you, and I know that for a fact. You were very big in Wildwood, New Jersey with Donald Trump, and he was out there last night. He walked out to a raucous crowd. But before that, after that, the union leader for the Teamsters was speaking, one of the big speakers last night, and he mentioned you. How big was that?
That was awesome. It was actually really awesome, especially coming from Staten Island and representing Southern Brooklyn as well, where we have such a huge union presence. My father was a union member for so many years, working for the Hotel Motel Trades Council.
Wow.
And it was really cool to get that type of shout out. And it just shows you the inroads between Republicans and the unions, how much, you know, we're the job creators. That's the bottom line. They know that. They know that.
Yes.
We're the ones creating the jobs. President Trump was the one that created the jobs, brought unemployment down for African Americans, for Hispanics. And that was, I think, huge last night that he spoke.
Were you upset that he also mentioned Mike Lawler as well?
Yeah. Well, I'm just glad that he mentioned my name first.
Yes, he did. He mentioned you first. Last night was a big deal for you and a big deal for J.D. Vance as well. I did speak to one of our mutual friends. We remain no name now. And this person said to me that I like J.D. Vance, but in New York, because of his stance on abortion and because of his stance on some of the other social issues, it doesn't work for us in New York. He's going to hurt us in New York. Is that an overstatement or somewhat right?
No, you know, I don't think it's going to, because he's evolving his positions on a lot of these things. I mean, he also did not like President Trump, but he's aligned himself more with...
He called him the American version of Hitler.
Well, which is terrible, right? But
I mean, yes.
You know, but I think J.D. Vance is, he's young. He's a good communicator. I think he can reach out to the young people. He's from a swing state of Ohio. He has a real amazing story to share with the American people about how he grew up with his grandparents, because his mother had an addiction and his father left them at a very young age. So that's something that can resonate, I think, with too many, sadly, Americans across the country. And I just think he'll be an inspiration, particularly for young people who may be coming from that similar background. So I think J.D. Vance, and you know, I spent a lot of time with J.D. actually when we were sitting next to each other in court when we went to the sham trial of President Trump. And so I got to know him there. And he's a good guy. I think he's going to be an asset to the ticket.
What were you doing on Saturday when Trump got shot?
Well, I was with one of my colleagues, actually, and it was really just shocking. You know, my mother sent me a text message saying, President Trump...
Your mother's a nice lady, by the
way. Well, my mother usually is filled with bad information, so when she texts me, I really kind of, like, don't really pay attention. But when I saw it, she goes, oh, my God, President Trump was shot. And I, you know, I thought that maybe this was misinformation, but certainly I went and turned on the Fox News, and I saw just unbelievable and tragic and sad, and shows you what they... Look, for 9 years... They have tried to destroy this man personally, professionally, financially, you know, everything from the whenever he came down that escalator, all the lies, all the misinformation, the sham impeachment, these ridiculous indictments. They tried to kick him off the ballot. They tried to put him in jail. And now, as a result, somebody tried to shoot him. Mm. And just days before, President Biden said
they did shoot him. They tried to kill him. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. Somebody tried to assassinate him. And days before, the president. Biden was saying,
put him in the bullseye.
So, I mean, that type of rhetoric is really what led to this moment. And it's really sad how far the Democrats have gone to destroy this individual. But I think it's made him stronger. He put it when he got up. It was so inspiring, man.
Awesome,
it was just
right?
So was awesome. I mean, this is this is the courageous, defiant, fearless leader that we need in this country and that the world needs to lead in peace through strength.
So in the final 10 seconds, very important question comes from one of our listeners, John Tobacco. You know John Tobacco.
Yeah.
He said, is Donald Trump, when he wins, is he going to make Nicole the ambassador for Greece?
Look, I know John would love to get rid of me just so he can run probably for the seat, right?
Come on, Kara, somebody, I don't know.
Well, we'll see what President Trump does, but I'll tell you, I'm real excited to actually serve with a Republican president for once. It would be so amazing to not have to kill myself to try to stop everything, but instead to move forward with this positive agenda to actually be able to secure the border, restore our economy, and lower our gas prices, lower the interest rates for Americans that could actually buy a home again and achieve the American dream and pay their credit card bills. I just would love to serve. I always wanted to be in the majority. I was always in the minority my whole life.
Yeah.
And I'm finally in the majority, and I've got this terrible president who's destructive, and Schumer. So we got to change that. Hopefully we'll come back with a Republican Senate and President Trump, and we will be able to do amazing things for this country, and I look forward to being a part of that.
Well, you did an amazing job on this show this morning, so thank you. It's always great to see you.
Well, maybe they'll make me White House press secretary.
Would
that would be a great job.
Would you want that job?
I would love to fight with the media every day.
Yeah,
and do it in a New York way, you know?
Yeah.
New York style. I think Trump would like that.
I think so, too. But you're going to have to go up against me because I want the same job.
Well, I'll make sure you at least get your questions. You could be on the top of the list every day for your questions.
And every once in a while when you're on vacation, I can fill in for you.
Yeah,
right?
There you go. I changed my mind. They really should make you White House press secretary. That would be great. You thought Sean Spicer was fun.
Oh, no. This
would be amazing.
Yeah, good to see you.
You would be a bouncer, too. You'd just, like, pick him up and throw him out.
There would be some physical, some physical as well. You all great. Great job today. Enjoy the rest of the weekend. Congrats on everything you're doing, Nicole. Thank you so much.
Great to be with you. Thank you.
You too. That's our great congresswoman out of Staten Island in Brooklyn. She really is terrific. My friend Nicole Maliotakis. Go get him. Tell him why New York's the best, Nicole. Go get him. We'll come right back on Sid and Friends in the morning, right after this.
My son turned 10 just the other day. He said, thanks for the ball, Dad. Come on, let's play. Can you teach me to throw? I said, not today. I got a lot to do. He said, that's okay. And he walked away, but his smile never dimmed. Said, I'm gonna be like him. Yeah, you know I'm gonna be like him. And the cat's in the cradle and the silver spoon. Little boy blue and the man on the moon. When you're coming home, Dad, I don't know when. But we'll get together then. You know we'll have a good time then. Well, he came from college just the other day. So much like a man, I just had to say, son, I'm proud of you. Can you sit for a while? He shook his head and he said with a smile, what I'd really like, Dad, is to borrow the car keys. See you later, can I have them, please? And the cat's in the cradle and the silver spoon. Little boy blue and the man on the moon. When you're coming home, son, I don't know when. Together then, Dad, you know we'll have a good time then. I've long since retired, my son's moved away. I called him up just the other day. I said, I'd like to see you if you don't mind. He said, I'd love to, Dad, if I can find the time. You see, my new job's a hassle and the kids are the flu. But it's sure nice talking to you, Dad. It's been sure nice talking to you. And as I hung up the phone, it occurred to me he'd grown up just like me. My boy was just like me. And the cat's in the cradle and the silver spoon. Little boy blue and the man on the moon. Son, I don't know when, but we'll get together then, Dad. We're gonna have a good time then.
Is Sid and Friends in the morning.
For my friends.
77 WABC.
Somebody once told me the world is gonna roll me. I ain't the sharpest tool in the shed. She was looking kind of dumb with her finger and her thumb in the shape of an L on her forehead. Well, the years start coming and they don't stop coming. Fed to the rules and I hit the ground running. Didn't make sense not to live for fun. Your brain gets smart, but your head gets dumb. So much to do, so what's wrong with taking
the back wrap up day two, and I appreciate I am being inundated. And if it sounds like exaggeration, it probably is. But in all seriousness, I'm being inundated with folks that loved these last two shows, saying they really feel like they're here with me. But they won't feel like they're here with me until they take a walk in Milwaukee. I mean, hard to bring that home, if you know what I'm saying. But it's been a fun 2 days. We've got great guests. And we have three more days coming up. Tomorrow's going to be very exciting. My friend Nancy Mace, congresswoman out of South Carolina, Believe it or not, she's speaking tomorrow night. Nancy, she hated Trump. Trump hated her. And now she's speaking tomorrow night. Kind of like J.D. Vance. He called Trump the American Hitler, and he's the vice president. So for all you folks that talk about Trump as being petty and he doesn't get over it, I mean, you're just so stupid. It's insulting. J.D. Vance called him the American Hitler. He's his vice president. Nancy May said horrible things about Trump. She's speaking tomorrow night. Who was that lady, the black rapper, who spoke last night, Justin or Lou?
Oh, Amber Rose.
Yeah, she said horrible things about Trump. She spoke last night. I voted for Hillary, said bad things about Trump. He loves me. So he's a very forgiving guy. Folks that talk about Trump don't know him. You're wrong. You're just flat out wrong. He's a very forgiving guy. And anyway, Nancy's going to speak tomorrow night, and I'm sure she'll join us tomorrow. I think both D'Esposito and Mike Lawler will join us tomorrow. I'm working on one of the Trumps before Thursday or by Thursday. So we got a lot more to do. But I got to go because I got to watch the Major League Baseball All-Star game tonight.
I got it. Good one. Good one.
Come on, you're not going to tune in for Paul Skeens?
Not even 1 second. I'm going to be at the convention watching the speeches
tonight.
That's
true. You're right about that.
Yeah. I was talking to Justin last night. And Justin's a great producer. He works all day. He doesn't just do the show and go home. He works all day. So does Lewis. So I call him. I go, what are you doing? He gave me an answer that I wouldn't wish on my worst enemy. He said, and I quote, I'm watching the home run hitting contest.
Well, I think I called it the Derby.
Whatever you called it, I said, and I love Justin, and I know your mom is listening. And,
yeah.
But you're just the dumbest son of a bitch you got ever created.
Well, what else was I going to watch? There's nothing else on.
What do you mean? You could have watched Trump walk out to the crowd.
Yeah.
Nothing else on.
Well, I know, but come on. I mean, you know.
There's the worst television in the world is anything to do with any. That includes football, basketball, even hockey. All-star competition is for losers.
What if I told you I won some money?
No, that does kind of change the conversation.
Yeah, but the buildup.
But what
of
kind
it
of degenerate is that? Yeah.
Me.
Well, me for about 20 years, too. The hell am I kidding?
All right. So it sounds like, you're talking to yourself.
Myself. Shut up. Arthur Idala said great show. Anthony Carone said great show. Everybody loves the show. So I got a busy day today. I'm going to hang out here. Believe it or not, Lou and Justin, I hate telling you this. I do, you know, but there are other shows here that walk over to us and go, hey, I'm a huge fan of Sid. Can I do our show today? So I'm going to do a bunch of that. And then I'm going to go back to the hotel, go to the gym, got a beautiful Lifetime Fitness, getting a really good workout, maybe grab an hour of sun, change again for the second time today, and then come back downtown for dinner and the convention tonight. It's a long day here, guys. And long day.
Saying hi to a lot of Palestinians would be great.
Yes. The Palestinians in Milwaukee love me.
They dig
love
you.
Me.
Yep.
I still can't believe what I saw yesterday. So what are you guys doing today? What's how hot is it in New York today?
93, right?
Yeah. You know, we hit 88 yesterday, and like I said, I was sweating bullets on the corner of Water and State in Milwaukee waiting for an Uber. I think, according to Dan Herschel, we don't get above 75 the next 3 days.
That's a perfect temperature.
I know. And a little bit of a breeze coming off, you know, the lake. So believe it or not, when the Wisconsin congressman joined me earlier and talked about how lovely Milwaukee is this time of year, he really wasn't wrong. Now, again, it's brutal. We are only about an hour and 45 minutes away from Green Bay. I could be in Green Bay in less than 2 hours. You guys know how cold it is in Green Bay. 90 minutes, I can be in Chicago. And a little under 2 hours, I can be in Green Bay. But I'm in Milwaukee. I would advise you guys to check my Instagram later on today, @Rosenberg.Sydney, @Rosenberg.Sydney. My Facebook, Sid Rosenberg, for pictures and videos, especially tonight from the convention. And I will talk to you all, as Gene would say, God willing, for a hump day Tunnel to Towers Wednesday show live from Milwaukee, 5 a.m. local time, 6 a.m. your time tomorrow morning. So until then, for my crew in Milwaukee, which this morning includes Dan Herschel and Eric Salas, and my great crew back home Lou Ruffino, Justin Ellick, and Noam Layton. Peace!
Hey now, you're an all-star. Get your game on, go play. Hey now, you're a rock star. Get the show on, get paid. And all that glitters is gold. Only shooting stars. Somebody wants could I spare some change? Well, cast, I need to get myself away from this place. I said, yeah, what a concept. I could use a little fuel myself, and we could all